Good evening, ladies. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aiken City Council work session, March 12, 2007. We have one item to talk about, and we appreciate our friends from Graniteville, Vaughn, being here, and others to talk about this issue. And so has to do with Graniteville, Vaucluse, Warrenville Incorporation. So, Roger, would you take over?
We have the Incorporation Committee is here tonight to talk to us briefly about their incorporation that they hope to accomplish later this year. And you have a memo from myself talking about some of the issues that are involved with the incorporation process. I'm sure Jim Holly and Gary Smith could talk to us for quite a length of time as far as how that process works. The one thing that we have a somewhat of a question, and one of the things to look at as we get into this discussion is the fact that in 1984 the city of Aiken annexed the bypass in this area, and so the incorporation area that they're looking at and what we have already annexed in the city touch borders there. And so that's the area that is of most concern, going from Highway 1 north and east on the bypass, or I call it the Northwest Bypass, the Robert Bell Parkway. But they're here tonight to explain what they're doing, why they're doing it, and where they go from here, and then to answer any questions you have. And if that's the case, I think, Ron, you're going to, you can just come to the microphone here.
Thank you. My name is Ron Wood, and I thank you for the opportunity to appear before this distinguished group tonight and explain to you what we've been doing over the past 14 months. It's been basically a concerned group of citizens, and it's a limited number of citizens who've been involved in this process for the last 14 to 15 months. Charles Hilton is the chairman of our committee. He's in Utah, and I drew the dubious distinction of standing before you tonight. Two other officers are here. This is Tina Bevington and Reverend James Abraham. And our remaining officer is Wanda McGee, and she's on medical leave and could not be here tonight. We've had two devastating events to occur in Graniteville over the past 2 years, and it's made quite an impact on the Graniteville, Vaucluse, Warrenville communities. The first you will remember was the train derailment wreck, where we had the chlorine spill, loss of 9 lives, 500 or so people were sent to local hospitals because of respiratory problems, had to be evaluated and treated, and somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 people were evacuated. It took months and months and months for that healing process to progress, and there are still some problems associated in the community with that chlorine spill. The chlorine spill also, in some fashion or another, led to the closing of the Avondale plants. I don't think it was the primary reason for the closing of the Avondale plants, but it paid a significant impact in the closing and the decision to close those plants. Hundreds of jobs were lost. We feel that incorporation is the engine that can drive some future improvements for our communities and to keep the communities from decaying. There's an awful lot of historical value, heritage in the Graniteville, Vaucluse, Warrenville communities. We want to preserve that. We feel that incorporation can also provide opportunities for development and cultural improvements. And we want to participate in state shared revenue, franchise fees, and the local option sales tax money to be able to improve our communities. And mostly important, we want to self-govern our communities and ourselves. And we feel that this is a way to do that. We have developed a map of the proposed incorporated area, and you would think that would be quite an easy process, but it has taken 14 months, and that's why I'm here tonight. There are still some concerns and some questions about that. That map has been a source of consternation and controversy since the first meeting we had. And all that is based on law, not where we would like for the boundaries of the proposed incorporated area to be, but it's governed by laws dealing with census tracts and census blocks. And you cannot arbitrarily split census tracts and census blocks. State law will not permit that. And it's based on the 2000 census. So we've worked long and hard with the Office of Research and Statistics in Columbia to make sure that we could get the map certified. A major concern, as Roger pointed out, to the city of Aiken is the parkway from Highway 1 to Road 118, which leads to Baltimore. We would like to propose a compromise tonight. We want to extend a hand of cooperation, good spirit. We want to make friends. We're not here to do anything that would be adversarial. So don't interpret anything like that. But there are things we can do, things we can't do. We're willing to concede the Convocation Center and the Roberto Hernandez Baseball Facility, that area, to the city. We will reconfigure the map if the Office of Research and Statistics will allow that. And the city attorney from Aiken and our attorney, Mr. Holley, have been to Columbia and talked with them, and I think we got a favorable reaction to our request, and I think they would be willing to work with us, and we'll be willing to let the attorneys work that out if that's the decision you make. Kent's Corner we will also include in the concession, and make sure that the boundary map is moved back, the boundary line. But we cannot move further up the parkway to 118 to where that apartment complex is, because the Office of Research and Statistics have indicated if there are residents involved, they will not approve that. No boundary changes. So essentially, that's where we are, and that's what we would like to propose to council tonight for your consideration.
Ron, do you have a map, a latest map, with you?
Mr. Mayor, I did not bring it.
I'm not sure everyone has seen it. That's why we've met a couple of times, but I don't know that everyone has seen the map. Maybe you have. I don't know. You see the Aiken map, of course, that we have on our agenda. But, well, I just thought that would be of some interest to those who have not seen your whole.
I can make it available and leave it here for a period of time if somebody would like to do that. Well, I do too out in the car, but it's going to take a while to go get it. So I'm just a couple of numbers that you would be interested in. The proposed incorporated area involves 7,021 residents. The density requirement has to be 300 people per square mile. We are just slightly over that 300 people per square mile. And it's 23.2 square miles.
Sounds good to me.
I think that's right. 23.2 square miles. And we meet the state code in every respect as far as those numbers are concerned.
Would you explain to us, I think I understand it, but maybe others may not, and I may not either, but explain to us why you have to have 7,000, at least 7,000 citizens within your area.
Mr. Mayor, I don't know where the number came from, but that's in the code. It could have easily been.
That's an order that another municipality that's close to you does not have to say no. Is that correct?
That's exactly right.
I mean, basically.
We have 7,000 people, 300 people per square mile, then the law requires us to notify existing municipalities that are within a 5-mile distance from where the proposed incorporated area is. But that's all it provides for is just official notification. If we had less than 7,000 people, the city of Aiken could say, no, we don't want you to incorporate, and you could stop it.
Yeah. Well, I think I've heard some concern that this is a tremendously large area to start with. First step, you know, your first step, baby's first step, you're looking at this whole big 23 square mile, whatever, which is actually a little bit larger than Aiken itself, square mile. And some have said, why in the world don't they start a little bit smaller? I mean, you can probably get approvals. And then grow from that. After, there's a learning curve here, I think, certainly for any city. We learn things every day, and we've been involved a long time. But, you know, just that thought there. Why is it that all of a sudden, you know, you decide you want to go this big? Why not go half this way and grow, so to speak?
Well, it's sort of like eating the elephant. You had to take one bite, and that's what we did. And what determined or dictated that geographical landmass was those census tracts that I alluded to earlier.
And again, so that you wouldn't have to get approval.
Right.
So is it that you feel like you couldn't get approval if you went smaller?
If I may, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
Because of the sparse population throughout this area of the county, if we take out a census tract against the city, we lose half of
it. I'm sorry, you lose half of it?
We lose half of Graniteville. There's no way to configure this using the census tracts that's rational and keeps the core communities together. You lose Vaucluse if you take this one out. You lose Warrenville if you take this one out. There's no way to configure it in a smaller fashion in our judgment, because the census tracts and blocks are so large. I think what the committee is telling you, this is the option. There are not other options that they can accomplish the same things by saving the heritage of these three communities and their ability to govern themselves in a way that the state law allows.
Well, Jim, let me ask a question. Even if you left out a census tract, as you say, maybe half of Graniteville, and you formed a community, your city, your municipality, couldn't you then have annexation into that areas without taking the whole track as an annexation?
Your Honor knows that we have some of the most conservative annexation laws in the nation. It's very difficult to annex, and that might be problematic. Also, we're dealing with other municipalities who may not be quite as supportive of our efforts and might want to oppose it no matter what we do. So we have to consider that also, besides just the interest of the city of Aiken to that area.
And if you look at some of those land masses, there are very few people in some of those particular areas now, but those areas are currently being considered for development. And right now, with the three major developments that would be going on in that area, we look for the population in 10 years to be more than 15,000 people. The next process, just in case you're interested how this goes, as soon as the boundary lines are determined and we can hopefully reach an agreement or a compromise, then we will proceed with getting petition signed. 15% of the registered voters and electors in that proposed incorporated area will have to sign a petition. We will send the petition along with a budget and a list of the services that we will provide to the Secretary of State, and he will turn it over to a legislative committee who will review that and make sure that the criteria meets the state law and that we do conform. And then if we do, then the Secretary of State will call for an election, and it's by simple majority. You lose by one vote or you could win by one vote. You have to, once the Secretary of State sends it back, you have to have an election established from within 20 to 90 days. And during that period of time, you have to send it to the Justice Department for them to review it also. So probably it would be in the neighborhood of 90 days before an election could be called. Our goal is, however optimistic that might be, is to have it on the ballot in October or November of this year.
Would you repeat the tax advantages that you talked about with incorporation? You mentioned the local option sales tax.
There are state shared revenue. Insurance companies who participate in business in South Carolina have to pay a fee. Insurance companies who aren't brokered in South Carolina has to pay a fee. The sin taxes, they have to pay a tax. Whiskey, alcohol, cigarettes, that sort of thing. And all that money is put in a pool and distributed back to incorporated municipalities at the end of the year by the Municipal Association of South Carolina. And it's predicated on population. Your percentage is based on your population. So you get state shared revenue, franchise fees from SCNG, Cablevision, Aiken Electric Co-op, those sorts of people.
How much do you think that will amount to, roughly?
More than $1 million.
So currently, Mr. Wood, Graniteville right now, because of them not being a municipality, is losing this revenue, this kind of revenue that could come to benefit the community.
Well, it's not available to us.
Right, because they're not being incorporated.
Right.
I have a question to ask our attorney. There was a meeting, I understand, in Columbia of the two bodies, our attorneys, and I'm not sure whom else.
Mr. Holly and I went to Columbia and met with Mr. Bowers, who is the gentleman they talk about that does the research and statistics for the Budget and Control Board for the state of South Carolina. He's the one who is helping them go through the process of putting together the census tracts. He's the one who's responsible for reporting to the Secretary of State that the census tracts total the amount that they need to total in order for this incorporation to go forward under the 7,000 resident rule, or be able to tell them, no, it doesn't qualify under that rule. He does that analysis to let the Secretary of State know whether they do qualify or don't qualify and whether they can go forward with it or not. The purpose for our meeting was to see if he was prepared to vary at all from the hard and fast rule that you have to use the census tracts in order to create these maps. And I was able to point out to him that we do have certain areas that the city of Aiken is already serving with water and sewer that have signed annexation agreements that weren't contiguous. Well, we had not actually gone ahead and annexed at this time. And the Convocation Center and the baseball field at USC Aiken, the Kemp's Corner that is near USC Aiken. And he was satisfied that since those were not residential properties, that we could probably configure the map by showing the census tracts, accepting from those census tracts a survey of the properties that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And he was confident that we could do it that way, but if we went all the way to the apartment complex where we know we've got residential people, and there are only 21 people, I think, over the $7,000 or 7,000 resident requirement, I'm confident there's more than 21 people in that apartment complex, and he was concerned if we took any of them that he would then not be able to give the certification to the Secretary of State because the census tract
includes the apartment
complex, and so that is certified, and so he is able to go to him and say these are certified numbers, and he's required to use the latest census to do that.
Aren't those apartments? Are those the ones that a lot of college students occupy?
That makes no. I don't believe that makes a difference.
But this wouldn't be there. They wouldn't be on the census here, is what I'm saying, right?
I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
I think there are people other than college students.
I know it's owned.
But I mean,
the apartment complex is actually owned by the Barnwell Public Housing Authority, and so there probably is some local residents there that are getting assistance with their monthly rent and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So the only issue right now that. The compromise is the apartment complex. Is that what I'm hearing?
Roger can probably answer that question for you better than I can.
If you look on the map that I have given all of you, and you can see what was annexed to the city in 1984, going from where Volcus Road is, down in Graniteville Road area, that whole area right now, we have currently water and sewer in that area. And not being here in 1984, I can't say for sure, but I would assume it was the intent of city council in the 80s. The reason we annexed that area was so that we could serve it in some time in the future. What I'm hearing them say this morning or today is that they would go ahead and give up the Convocation Center, Roberto Hernandez Baseball Field, and Kent's Corner, but the other area that we would... we had at one time envisioned serving just to the north and west of the bypass, we would not be able to serve anymore. So the water that we put in there, the sewer that we have in there, that infrastructure could serve the one side of the road but not the other side of the road.
We already have infrastructure there?
Yes. You know, we're already serving the apartment complex with water. We're serving the Convocation Center. We're serving the baseball fields.
I have to say that I really would love to see a map. I was confused when we didn't have a map, frankly, with our information
tonight.
They
never gave me one. So.
And also, if you think that the area, and I think it could too, could grow from 7,000 to 16,000 mm-hmm. people, I want to know your attitude toward impact fees. Because we're looking at road traffic problems here. And, you know, we would like for the cities to work together on that so that one, you know what I'm saying, so that we work together.
Well, we've got so many acres that need to be developed, I'm not sure that we're going to be concerned about impact fees for a long time. The west side of Aiken and Graniteville are pretty much going to run into each other. They're just going to overflow. And I see that happening in the next 2 to 3 years. And there may be things that we may have to work together on there, because I certainly would hate to see the west side of Aiken develop into the south side.
Thank you. That's exactly my concern.
Because I live in Midland Valley, and I really don't want to have to go through all that every day. But there have only been, according to my understanding, unless if you need to correct me, please do so, but there have only been three incorporations in the state of South Carolina in the past 10 years. There have been some, the town of Taylor's tried to incorporate, and they didn't meet all the criteria. If you've been reading the newspaper lately, Irmo and Ballantyne are having quite a skirmish. Greer pretty well shot. Taylor's out of the saddle, and we hope that we can cooperate and work together, and we're going to need you as good neighbors, and hopefully you'll look at us the same way that we can be good neighbors. We're going to get you the map, ma'am.
One of the things I think is important for council to understand, under our state law, as I interpret it, and Jim's worked with this more than I have, and so if I get it incorrect, I'm sure he won't hesitate to correct me. But if they are able to put together the map that shows that they have the 7,000 residents and the minimum per mile requirement, there's really not a whole lot the city of Aiken can do to object to what they're trying to do. And so by them coming to the city and offering what they're offering, they really are making a concession they don't necessarily have to make. You could file an objection with the Secretary of State that you don't like what they're doing, but unless you're able to somehow otherwise thwart their efforts, any objections that you might make, the council might make as a body, really aren't going to, you're not going to be able to stop the incorporation by objecting.
We could annex the Convocation Center, could we not?
Well, the Convocation Center isn't going to stop them really, because they have, there aren't any residents there.
No residents.
If you were able to annex another area that had residents in it or something like that, you may be able to stop what they're doing. But
that's what's so confusing to me about, and I'm sure it was to you too, about this census tract business. Because we go all the time and annex little pieces at a time into the city of Aiken, and you know they're in different census tracts.
That's annexation as opposed to incorporation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Jane, that's why I brought up the question a little bit earlier to Jim, and Jim answered it, but it's a matter of opinion. There are certainly annexation laws, antiquated, but we use them as best we can when we have a need to, and it's profitable. And so I still think that is something could be done. But we don't want this thing to be negative at all, but I think we do need to have all the issues on the table, and that's what we're doing. We're asking questions. I think we did, in fact, have the idea, as Roger's already talked about, of being able to annex, being able at some point in time to move across that bypass. So I think there's still some questions that will have to be answered here. You know, I think it's I think it's a good idea to incorporate. But I still question. I question the size, the need for it at this time. That size. I still think you could grow. You could be smaller. You could grow. But these are still questions I personally have in my mind. That doesn't mean I don't agree or disapprove, but I still have questions.
Yes. Jim, how far up University Parkway are you going past Vaucluse Road, or is that the stopping point?
That's the stopping point.
That is the stopping point. Now, when you go up Vaucluse Road, do you go left and right of Vaucluse Road, or do you?
No, unfortunately, it doesn't permit us to do that.
We have a presentation now.
Okay.
And we can leave that with you, and then Roger, if that's okay, I'll pick it up in a week or so.
That'd be great.
Y'all can keep it.
Thank you, Ron.
Let me ask the question to Jim or Mr. Holly or Mr. Wood. What happens if we raise objection, we the city raises objection to this?
Madam Councilwoman, I think the incorporators would first be disappointed because they want to work together, not create an adversarial relationship from the get-go. But legally, in my opinion, subject to your own attorney's interpretation, if we meet the population requirements, the city has no legal standing to object, and it would be a negative comment, but one that carries no legal significance under the law. And you know, with respect to any utilities that the city has in the ground, it may be once this incorporation is successful, as we hope it will be, then that city council, elected by the people of those communities, could work with the city in allocating service areas. Certainly, no one can take your utility lines without paying for them. So you're protected that way. So the city's interests are protected through certain mechanisms. And one question, I misunderstood. I know there's an agreement with the Valley Public Service Authority about service area along the portion of the bypass we're talking about, and I'm going on memory.
Our agreement is that we would have 300 feet north and west of the bypass. And 300 feet, I believe, was set up. I was not here at the time. Was so that typically most of your commercial development will fall further back, will fall within that 300-foot area. So our commercial base and the tax base that we were looking at along the bypass was in the area that we were serving with water and sewer.
But I don't believe that particular strip of road has been annexed.
Robert Bell is the only portion that has not been annexed.
Okay, so.
And that has a non-taxable base there because it's a university property.
And it's maybe at my age, basic things on recollection is not necessarily a reliable thing to method to go about discussing something, but there have been no annexations in this area that I'm aware of.
That is correct.
At some time. And, you know, if I may, on behalf of these people, say they have certain rights they're trying to assert and to govern themselves, and they hope to do it in a positive fashion under laws and such as it permits it. But it's difficult for them to take actions that undercut what they're trying to do and create potential adverse actions against their efforts. This is an area that's perhaps from some perspectives has been overlooked for a long time. And they have a right to try to govern themselves and make it work. They have enormous challenges to overcome, but they're willing to try to make the effort to do it to help themselves and not have somebody else come in and take over what they built over the last 150 years.
Okay. I have a question for Mr. Wood. Mr. Wood, you've lived in Graniteville for...
Oldest 60 years.
Over 60 years. And what happens if, what's the future of Graniteville if nothing happens with incorporation? What do you see?
Deterioration. Homes, churches, the original school built by Mr. Gregg, that will be taken care of because the Gregg Graniteville Foundation is involved. But homes and churches are going to be impacted in a very negative way over the years. And it's going to decline if we don't have some sort of revenue stream to come in to not just maintain, but to improve. And there are some development opportunities in Graniteville that are moving ahead right now, and we feel like if we are a city and we have local option sales tax, that we can assist and accelerate some of those development mm-hmm. opportunities.
Okay. I assume that this is just a meeting to inform us mm-hmm. of what you're doing, since you've got the 7,000 people that you need, over the 7,000 people, and I appreciate you coming and presenting the facts to us. I'm familiar with the area, having worked in that area for so long, but I do want to tell you that, looking at your map, you've got some challenges ahead of you. Going across number one, picking up the jagged area over in Warrenville and those areas, you've got some challenges, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how you get those worked out. I wish you good luck.
Thank you.
But I do know that it would probably benefit the area greatly to have a little bit more funds coming in from whatever source you can get them. But I'm not...
We wish the land mass was smaller, but it's nothing that can be done about that because of the limitations mm-hmm. caused by the census tract and census blocks. Surprisingly so, looking at the land mass area that is a concern to everyone, including us. I mean, we want to make sure it's developed somewhere along the way. There are only 2,400 or so registered electors in that proposed incorporated area. 15% is less than 360 people to sign a petition. Simple majority wins, one vote loses, one vote wins. So it's not as monumental as it may appear just by being overwhelmed by that map.
I guess my problem is that the numbers are driving the map, and it really is a gerrymandered, very unusual kind of district. Very hard to manage. Its interface with the city is going to be very difficult, as I see it, but having two city blocks, if you will, up to each other gives us a lot more problems. That's basically where I see it.
But I'm not sure they would be as difficult to manage if we had jurisdictional problems by the city of Aiken and the new city being have same property in different cities. That could very easily occur if we cross some of those boundary lines. Same property in two cities. That would be very, very difficult to manage.
It's going to kind of be like going to Augusta and driving down Whiskey Road and not knowing when you get from Columbia County to Richmond County or vice versa, and not knowing when you get from Martinez to the next little town there, because the everything is just so together there. And I just came back from D.C. and when you go from Washington, the capital, to Silver Springs, Maryland, you don't know when you leave D.C. and go into Maryland at all. I mean, it's just all right there together. And so I don't know how they work those issues out, but it looks to me like you're going to be pretty much in the same situation when it comes to the city of Aiken being right there, and then you being right next to that. And if you develop that area, I think there needs to be some concerns about your traffic, I guess, on our streets or however we need to say that, and who helps to pay for some of that. But those are the smaller issues as I see them, and maybe they're large, but that's pretty much what I see. But it's not like it doesn't happen elsewhere, because it does.
if I may, and I know we need to draw this soon to a conclusion, I respectfully disagree with calling it gerrymandered because we're complying with the law. We're doing it the way the law tells us to do it. You know,
in order to achieve your particular goal, which is 7,000.
That's a part of it, yes.
That's the number.
Because if we didn't, we wouldn't
be successful. See, that's not the way I would ever set out to...
Right. But if we don't do that, respectfully, we won't be successful, in my opinion, because of what we already know.
You mean that other towns will object?
Yes, ma'am.
Do all the communities have to? Does only one town have to?
I think it's the laws within
500 miles.
With five miles, I think. We have to. If you're under 7,000, you have to get approval from any other city that's within 5 miles.
Which would be Burnett Town and us.
And North Augusta.
Possibly.
North Augusta thought they were outside the 5 miles.
Right. But they're growing as we speak. And, again, these people are trying to assert their rights to govern themselves and to do it in a lawful way. And there can be a difference of opinion on whether it's the best way. I respect that. But, you know, in Columbia, there are towns next to each other all over the area.
Right.
Springdale, Forest Acres, and they find a way to resolve it. And another way of looking at this, if the city were developing out that way, it'd be sending traffic into the county, into these communities. And would y'all be paying to improve the roads in the county where you're sending traffic? We want to work together. That's the goal. How to best do it so that we have thriving communities that work together for the betterment of the area and the county and not looking at it as yours or mine. Because it can be relegated to that. These people are trying to continue a heritage they've had for 150 years and to do it according to law. And they hope that the entire county will support that effort so that in the future we can all work together to make everybody in the county better off and not just areas of the county better off.
Tim, I think, Ron, I think we all appreciate that. I think there may be still a couple of differences of opinion as to how that could be done.
How many registered voters did you say?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,400. Mr. Mayor, council members, thank you for the opportunity to be here this evening. We want to move ahead. We want your blessing. We want your support. We're willing to make these concessions and work with you in any way that we possibly can. We want to be good neighbors. We need your help.
In fairness to you, I have to say that if I'm going to Augusta to use I-20, I travel your road. I go through your town, and you're not enduring the benefits of any taxes from me.
So, impact fee coming.
Mr. Holly, one thing I would like to say, and I could, you know, looking at Graniteville, Vaucluse, and Warrenville, and the devastation that they've been through here in recent months and the past year, I can certainly understand how you would want to assemble yourselves together and incorporate so that you would have a future there. And it would just be that my hopes would be that you would work hand in hand with the city of Aiken, that you would look at the way the city of Aiken is developing, some of the mistakes that we've made along the way, and try to develop this area as much in the character of Aiken as you possibly could.
Absolutely. Very good. Well, thank you very much for the presentation and your time and efforts. Thank you, Mr. Holly, as well. We need to pause a moment. We're looking for some Girl Scouts.
They're waiting for us, Mayor. They're just waiting for us to start.
We leave this there, ma'am?
Okay.
Are they leaving us there, ma'am?
What?
Are they leaving us there, ma'am?
Yes.
Is that your son-in-law on the front page or your son on the front page of the paper? Saturday.
City Council meeting this evening, March 12th, 2007. We have a special treat tonight, and that is that today is the Girl Scout birthday, 95 years old. So they will be coming up after the prayer to the microphone and leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay? And then they'll sit down for a moment, we'll read a proclamation, and then they have something to give to council, I think. Yeah. Not everybody, but just council. We can cheer. Okay, if you'd like to stand with us for our prayer and our pledge, then please do so.
Lord Heavenly Father, it's a privilege to be here tonight as we honor and celebrate the Girl Scouts who for 95 years have just really molded and the character building that they have accomplished through all the young ladies throughout the decades. There are many issues that are here before City Council tonight, concerns by several citizens, and issues that we bring before this body. We just ask for your wisdom and discernment, Lord, in everything that we do. We just lay it at your feet, Lord, and just ask that you would go ahead and provide us clarity and to guide City Council this evening. Just be with our community. We thank you for the blessing that you poured upon it for so long, and we just ask that you continue to do so. And bless our proceedings throughout this evening. We pray in your name. Amen.
Before we get to the proclamation, additions or deletions to the agenda. And I know that we do have one. Mr. LeDuc, do you want to mention that or do you want me to? This is also, in addition to Girl Scout Week, it is what we call Sunshine Week. That has to do with the freedom of information. And it has to do also with government being open as much as absolutely possible to the public. So that's a proclamation that we have as well. So we'll add that to the agenda if council agrees. And we'll just make that number two under recognitions. And is there anything else to add or delete or comments to the agenda? If not, a show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Okay, the proclamation for the Girl Scouts Week. Allow me to read this, please. And I apologize for my voice tonight. Whereas Monday, March 12th, 2007, marks the 95th anniversary of Girl Scouts of the USA, founded by Juliet Gordon Lowe in 1912 in Savannah, Georgia. And throughout its distinguished history, Girl Scouting has helped build millions of girls and women of courage, confidence, and character. Whereas through the dedication, time, talent of volunteers of different backgrounds, abilities, and areas of expertise, the Girl Scout organization thrives for girls in so many settings. And whereas through Girl Scouting's unique leadership development program, girls define leadership by making the world a better place by discovering, connecting, and taking action in their communities. And whereas Girl Scouting takes an active role in increasing girls' awareness of the opportunities available to them today in math, science, sports, technology, health, and fields that can expand their horizon. Whereas more than 3.7 million Girl Scout members nationwide will be celebrating the 95 years of this American tradition. With nearly 50 million women who grew up participating in Girl Scouting and exemplifying the impact of this amazing movement. Now, therefore, the Council of the City of Aiken hereby proclaims the week of March 11th through 17th, 2007, as Girl Scouts Make the World a Better Place Week in Aiken, and called upon all citizens to join the City Council in applauding the Girl Scout organizations for the commitment they have made in building courage, confidence, and character in America's girls. And it's signed by all the council members. So let's give them a hand.
These are loaves of bread that the girls made. It's called Spread the Bread Project, and they made them to give to people in the community that are important to us.
Thank you.
To make the world a better place.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for this.
Just skip.
You're going to get picked last.
Thank you. One right here. Yep. Beverly and Dan. The two ladies.
The two ladies.
Right behind.
Thank you.
You're in hell shit with you.
What, Sarah?
Nothing for water.
I can say that one.
Hey, well, thank you again so
we'll
much.
Share. For it says spread the bread.
So much to us. Well, thank you, young ladies, for helping and leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance. And leaders, thank you very much for what you're doing to help guide the young ladies. It means so much to us and the community in the future as well. So you are welcome to stay if you'd like, or you might. I don't think you really want to stay. No, but thank you for so much.
Mr. Mayor, it's his birthday today.
What do you got, dude? Just another day.
Thank you. Somebody just told me it was Don Spall's birthday today, too. It's not on the agenda to sing happy birthday, Don, so... happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Not any place I'd rather be.
I
didn't give that to him. We'll get it to him.
Thank you, Roger. We need to give them the proclamation. We didn't do that. We added the second proclamation, too, having to do with Sunshine Week, and let me read that, please. Whereas a crucial element of a great democracy is citizen participation and citizen awareness of the public's business discussed by elected leaders, and trust is a crucial element in this partnership. Whereas the City of Aiken recognizes that municipal government leaders must uphold trust, that trust, by building a healthy, positive relationship with their residents and voting citizens. And whereas South Carolina's Freedom of Information Act is an important part of this partnership between governments and the people they serve, because it provides the blueprint of expectations for citizens, the news media, and the government leaders. And whereas municipal leaders are elected officials closest to the people they serve and have the most direct contact with the citizens who elect them. And whereas the Council of the City of Aiken believes openness in government proceedings at all levels makes for credibility and accountability our citizens expect and deserve. Now, therefore, the Council of the City of Aiken, South Carolina, does hereby commit to open government proceedings as outlined in the South Carolina Freedom of Information Act, and is pleased to participate in the partnership with the Municipal Association of South Carolina and the South Carolina Press Association to recognize March 11th through 17th as Sunshine Week, a national initiative to encourage dialogue about the importance of open government and freedom of information, signed by all council members of the City of Aiken.
Do we need to approve
this? Okay. Moving now to the minutes, a consideration of the minutes of the work session and the regular meeting of February 26, 2007, and the work session of March 5th, 2007. Is there any discussion?
I move for approval, Mr. Mayor, unless there are any corrections.
Okay.
I second.
We have a second. If there's no discussion, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under old business, first item is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, we have two appointments to come before council tonight, both by Councilmember Sprawls. One is for Mary Ellen Krippner for the Arts Commission, and the other one was for Sam Erb to be reappointed to the Accommodation Tax Committee.
Okay, do we have a motion?
I so move, Mr. Mayor. We approve these two appointments.
Okay.
Reappointments. Excuse me.
Okay. I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. You may have, does anyone have any nominations for a next meeting?
I do, Mr. Mayor. I have two. I would like to reappoint Stephen Anaclario to the
Design Review
Board, and I would also like to appoint Wendy Bryce to the Accommodations Tax Board. I think you have an information sheet on her.
Yes, we do here. Okay. Any others?
There's not. That's not listed as an opening.
I made an appointment, and she does not meet the state's guidelines.
Oh, that's right.
So
I remember.
Have to do another appointee.
I remember
and,
that.
I believe this one does, according to what Roger has said.
Thank you.
So.
Yeah, I do remember you saying that. I have some. Thank you.
Okay.
I would like to reappoint Ann Lattimore to the Arts Commission. And I would like to reappoint Neil Shaw to the Accommodations Tax Committee.
Okay. All right. I have one. I'd like to reappoint Tom Abbott to the Arts Commission. Are there any others? Okay. Right. We'll move on to item two. Under old business, it's a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone properties off of Douglas Drive. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance to rezone certain properties located on East Pine Log Road from residential single family, RS-15, to planned residential and to approve proposed concept plan. Last March, a year ago, council approved the sale of property
on Douglas Drive, which consisted of 9 acres of property as RS-15. The applicant went to the Planning Commission and at their January meeting approved on a 6-1 vote the rezoning of this property from RS-15 to PR. There were some questions at that time when it came to City Council, and you asked that I meet with some citizens and Mr. Gingrey at that time. We also at that time got in a report from Dr. Brisbane about some of the sensitivity of that acreage. At the time that he went to the Planning Commission, he had approval for 25 lots for that piece of property. When we met with him, it seemed, at least from what I gathered from council, that if it could be reduced, the number of lots and the acreage could be increased, that the city would own and decreased by what he would own, that seemed to be the favorable way to go. So after working back and forth with the applicant on this case, he has reduced the plan as what you have before you, which is for 12 lots. They're basically all an RS-10 or larger except for one of them, which is near the well site. He has taken out the roads and leaving the majority of the property that the city could then buy back at the same price that he paid us for us. Councilmember Smith asked us to look at if they went ahead and built an RS-15 and used all 9 acres, how many lots or homes could be built there. Depending, I looked at it one way, and I was able to get 18 homes that could go in there under the RS-15. Larry Morris looked at it a different way. He said he could get 20 lots in there. But again, this is just our looking at it, so say 18 to 20 lots could be built on the 9 acres. Also, the 9 acres would encapsulate most of the ditch area from Douglas Road back to and beyond the ditch area. What is proposed to you tonight is a planned residential, which means City Council has the ability to put whatever conditions or regulations you want on this. You had asked him to give you several house plans, which are attached here. All of them are two-car garage, and the houses range from the mid-14,000, 1,400 square foot up to around 1,600. Based on that, the price range that in talking to the developer would be probably from about $160,000 price to about $200,000. There are several conditions with the PR plan, which are before tonight. The water would be served from the front, the sewer would be served from the rear. Stormwater retention would not be required. That way we could save more space out there for without having to cut down the trees and open it up. That they would have to execute this within 120 days. The planning director would make sure that the plans are built in accordance with what was submitted on the house designs, and that each house would be at least 1,400 square feet with at least a one-car garage. So you have those drawings before you, and I know that there are citizens here that would like to speak on this. So for your approval tonight, this is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone the property and approve a concept plan for 4 acres on Douglas Drive.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance. So if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak, you certainly may do so. Just come up to the mic, if you would, and give us your name and address.
Can I move the mic?
Sure. Unless you want to bend over there and talk.
My back would never let me get back up again. My name is Bob Raymer, 618 Douglas Drive. Your Honor and City Council, we've thought long and hard over this topic for the last 2 weeks. In fact, it wasn't until recently that we even had a consensus on what we feel is the best for the neighborhood. All options considered, we would like to support Mr. Gingrey's proposal, yes, I know we're shocked, for rezoning to PR with the 11-plus-1 homes on Douglas and Henry. This allows us to retain some green space and allows us to keep some semblance of integrity to our neighborhood. We feel the alternatives would be devastating to our community. We therefore respectfully request you to vote for the rezoning to PR for the parcel in question with the stipulations of a minimum of 1,400 square feet heated space, a minimum of one car attached garage, similarity to the homes displayed on the city agenda website, retention of mature trees in the neighborhood that are not encumbering the homes, and some teeth in this proposal with monetary repercussions if not held to. Thank you.
Bob, thank you. Before you go, let's see if there's any questions. Any questions?
Do you have any suggestions for what the green space that's indicated behind this proposal should be like? In other words, should it be untouched?
Yes. Left as natural as possible. We would also like to have as many of the trees on the land left if it does not encumber the homes. We do not want to see the land stripped, and we're afraid that could possibly happen.
But in planned residential, am I right, Mr. LeDuc, we haven't identified any mature trees or anything on this property, right?
No, we have not. There's not been any tree survey. Now, from the back area where the sewer line is at, there would have to be well, we could try to go ahead and avoid, and again, no survey has been done, but because the sewer will be served from the back, there would be some area opened up, but we could go ahead and vegetate that in some way. We just wouldn't plant trees over the sewer line again. At least in the very back area, in other words, the next item on the agenda is going to be the reconveyance of the property that he originally purchased from us so that he would wind up with 4 acres, and that could be left as natural as it is today without any trails or anything else in that area. To answer your question, there has not been a tree survey done on the front portion of the front 3.2 acres that he intends to build on.
And that's one of the reasons we created planned residential, so that we could identify major trees and save them if possible.
That's right.
And we didn't do that on Barnwell, so it was cleared. We didn't do it on Pine Log Road, so it was cleared.
Now, I don't know how many significant or grand trees. A significant tree or grand tree is something, depends if it's a pine or a hardwood, be 12 inches, 16 inches, and then dogwoods are 4 inches and above, I believe Ed is correct on the smaller type trees would typically be left unless there was right exactly in the middle of the lot where a lot would have to go.
If we approve this tonight and we don't have those trees identified, what happens?
In other words, unless we specify which trees are going to be saved, and if we don't have something specified tonight, then without that, in our attorney, then he could theoretically cut those trees down. Now, what you could do is to allow staff to work with them to make sure that the significant and grand trees would be left in the site unless it could not be avoided, similar to what we did on Park Avenue where the Charleston's type homes were built.
But he indicated those trees on the plot.
Yes, he did.
Remember that?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And we only had to go back, I think, on one of them to cut that down.
And he came back to us on that one. Right.
So,
could there not be a committee appointed that the developer would have to work with in order to cut anything down in the placement of the homes?
The city council cannot... City Council cannot give up their authority to a citizen group to review these sorts of things. That would be a violation of state law, in my opinion. And just to address your comment about the monetary penalty in case the developer does not comply with the ordinance, and I'll defer to Richard because this really is more of a city court issue, but every ordinance that City Council passes should be complied with by the people that it's addressed to, and if you fail to comply with the ordinance, you can be issued an ordinance summons, you can be summoned to come to city court, you can be put in jail for, I think, 30 days for each offense, and a fine of $500 for failure to comply with the ordinance. Each day that you fail to comply is a continuing violation of the law. So there is some teeth in enforcing this ordinance.
Yeah. But we mentioned this because it was brought to our attention that it has not been enforced in the past.
Yeah. Could we not make it a condition of the approval that there be a tree study submitted to the planning division, and that all the trees on there be identified, and that we follow basically the same principle that we have in the tree ordinance for planned commercial?
You might want to get Ed to address all of these issues. I know there is concern about requiring a tree survey for a residential development.
Except this is PR.
Right.
And we have done this on PR before.
It was the point of PR, frankly, Gary.
Mm-hmm. Well, in order for council to designate a tree to be saved, you have to be able to look, Ed has to be able to look at a plat and say, okay, that's where the tree is.
I mean, there's two different ways that I see that this could go about. One, we could bring back a plat at the next meeting, identifying the 3.2 acres, all the significant and grand trees, and the approximate layout of the different, you know, houses where they would be. The other way would be going ahead and giving the authority, and then they can give us authority to the staff, and our horticulturalist and the planning director would make certain that all the grand and significant trees are kept, and unless they're, I mean, if it's right in the very center of the lot, obviously you can't keep something like that, but everything else would be retained.
I personally feel like that would be the way to go. This issue has just gone on and on and on and on with city council, with the initial mistake, and then dragging Mr. Gingrey back in here again to correct, and then met with some of the citizens, and then thought they had everything worked out, and then it didn't. So I think we can trust the staff of the city. To go out there and take a look and make the recommendations. Certainly, we do not want to see this land stripped. I'd like to see the grand trees preserved, if at all possible. But I think that our city staff is sufficient in doing that.
We can make it a condition.
I think the developers here, and
I would have no problem that being a condition, as long as Mr. Gingrey agreed that the grand trees and significant, again, when I said grand tree or significant tree, we're talking about 12 inches on a hardwood, 16 inches on a pine, or the pines and the hardwoods still the same, Ed? Okay, 12 inches on each one, that we would save those 12-inch significant, yeah. 16 inches
Bill,
of grand.
Bill, do you mind coming up here, please, and making your comments?
I'm Bill Gingrey, 104 Englewood Drive, Aiken. We have to take some trees out to put a house in and driveways, and other than that, I love trees, and it costs money to take down big trees, and big trees are pretty, and I have no intention of taking down a nice tree. I would be cutting my own throat to do that, and I'll be glad for anybody to come out and look at the trees. I'm going to sell the property, but the guy that I'm going to sell the property to feels the same way I do, and I will stay involved in it. I'll be glad to.
Bill, I'm here. That's okay. The reason that I'm personally concerned and want to see it as part of this approval of the ordinance is because we can trust you, but the next person that comes along.
Right.
And so I think Dick was on target in terms of saying let's make it a condition and part of this agreement, because we've been told this twice before and it hasn't been done. So I recognize you want to get moving and move this along, and certainly we do as well, but that I would be comfortable with that being part of a condition.
You mean that somebody comes out and
a tree survey will be done before we start.
We'll be glad to make it a part. I'll be glad to have it as a part of the ordinance that we will flag the trees that we're going to save.
Okay.
And call and let somebody from the planning department come out and look at those trees and make sure that mm-hmm. none are being taken out. If we've got a whole lot mm-hmm. full of nothing but trees, mm-hmm. they need to be thinned. And
right.
So, you know.
Let's make it a condition then.
Exactly.
That Ed we'll work with you.
That's fine.
And to Tom Rapp also. He'll pull Tom Rapp in. And
that's fine.
The three of you or however many it takes.
Okay.
But our staff will work with you.
Okay.
And I think that goes without saying. Nobody expects you to leave a tree 2 feet from the foundation.
Right. Right. That's unreasonable.
And that can be a condition then.
What I would suggest, Gary and I could come up with the exact language, but the language would be something that, Gary, except for the location of the homes, driveways, and utilities, all other grand and significant trees would be saved on each home.
That's fine.
Site.
Mr. Mayor.
That could be a case where we really need to move a tree, and we would be glad to call and get approval to do that. I mean, I don't want to lock it in where a tree, for some reason or other, needs to come out, and we're locked in, and we don't have any way of moving it. So, I mean,
But this is exactly what we had on those other properties, folks. I mean, I'm not trying to argue about it. I mean, I'm just telling you what's happened with the ones we've dealt with before. And unless we actually identify the trees ahead of time,
I think that's what he said he's going to do, Jane. We're going to identify it ahead of time, get it to look at these before we move along.
Now, we'll get time. We have to do that.
Okay. This shouldn't be a hard thing to do now, folks.
Now, we'll lay the house out. The house and driveway, so you can see where the house and driveway is going to be, and those trees obviously have to come out. And then we'll flag what the rest of the trees that we think need to be left. And somebody can come out and inspect them. If they don't agree, if there's some more that they think need to stay, then we'll be acceptable. We'll go along with whatever we need to do.
Given the sizes that you're planning, the depth of the lots is quite good, right?
Yes.
And so you could do
a little bit
of juggling to save.
Yes. Right. Yes. And that's something we could work with the builder, is to adjust the home forward or backward, left or right, to maximize the number of trees in there. And there's ways of doing that, as you well know.
Well, these plans have to go to the inspection department to get a building permit. So you'll have a first shot at what's going on anyway. And you probably could make arrangements for them to work with the planning department to alert them that a house is fixing to be started, as a way to keep control of it, if that's what you're concerned about.
Mm-hmm. But they don't do that, do they? The building inspector?
Right now we do not, because in a single family home site, our regulations allow a developer to go in if they wanted to and take down all the trees. But in this particular area, we will identify that any building permits that come before our building official will first have to go to Ed Evans' office to make sure the trees are preserved. That meets this requirement, this condition that council is asking for. But Ed, is that fine with you? You're working with Tom Rapp, you, Rachel. I know Tom's tougher than any of us on trees, so.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I do want to thank both sides of this issue for at least coming to some kind of compromise for what we need to do here so we could put this to rest. I know that it wasn't easy to get there, but I'm really glad that they have decided to do that. And if you're ready for a motion.
Mm-hmm. We're still in the public hearing.
We have someone else to speak.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. So we still want to hear from whoever wants to speak.
Okay.
Yes, I'm Melita Wilson. I live at 401 Henry Street. I live on lot number 12 on this right here. Mm-hmm. And I suggest instead of having 12 lots, they have 11. Because the way this is laid out for his lot number 1 here, there is only enough room for a driveway. Mm-hmm. And I think it would look stupid. And I think it would devalue my home property. And I think they need to go out there and look at that, because first of all, that property, if they put a house there, you would have your driveway, and then the rest of his property faces his neighbors. He has no road frontage except his driveway. And I think that's a little dumb.
You mean at the very end?
Yes, that one right there. And right in the very corner is a huge water drainage ditch. Mm-hmm. That clogs up a lot, and we have to call them to have them come out and clean it all out. And they can't cover it up or anything like that because the water really comes down the street, and the dirt comes down the street and fills it all up. And I mean, we'd have to go out and look at it, but it just doesn't seem feasible to me.
How that lot size looks larger.
It's wider, but I do have a question, and it might relate to what you're saying now, is that we are showing these 12 lots here, but is this after the engineering study, or do you still have to do that to make sure that they're all going to fit on here? Isn't that what you... So there's no problem with that drainage ditch that's next to where she is?
If that happened to be a problem there, we would have to put in another piece of pipe.
Larry Morris stated at the last meeting that there is a drainage problem there and that some drainage would have to go ahead and be applied in that case, but he hasn't talked to the engineer, so the engineer would have to work that out. Mm-hmm. As far as this is concerned, if he wanted to vary this plan whatsoever, let's say he wanted to change one of these lots or alter it whatsoever, he would have to come back to City Council. Right. He'll have to build it according to the plan that's in front of you, and if there's be any changes, and in other words, if on this first lot something happened, they couldn't get it in the way it's situated right now because of this drainage, then they would have to come back to City Council and ask for some modification to the concept plan. So he will have to build it, and that's the security council has, that the plan that you have before you for these 12 lots will have to be exactly this way, or get council's approval to make any changes. So yes, we know there's a drainage problem.
Yeah, because there's a big drop-off.
And our engineer who was here at the last meeting, unfortunately he's not here tonight because he's got pneumonia, said that he would have to sit down with their engineer and work out whatever details to take care of that drainage. And that would have to meet to his satisfaction. Would have to meet the city's satisfaction to be dealt with. Because we can't allow that water to be spilling on you or other neighbors.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to see that just stay green so that people could use that little area there to walk back into the green space. I think that's what they need to do. But I think that's a problem. I don't see... you'd have to go out there and look at it, really. I think you'd see how silly it would look. I wouldn't want my front yard right adjacent to my neighbor's probably driveway, you know. He just doesn't have any road frontage. But that's all. Thank you.
Well, Ms. Wilson, I'm not sure. Did you get your question or your comment answered?
Well, I prefer they just put 11 lots is what I want. And eliminate that one, that's what I want.
Okay.
Because I think it would be better if it was eliminated and then they just use that for the green space too. Or even, if possible, I'd be willing to buy the lot at a reasonable price, you know, if that's possible.
You could talk to Mr. Gingrey about that, I guess.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Hi. Jenny Stoker, 331 Kershaw Street. I'll skip a lot of my preface because I was going to fuss at y'all a little bit about all of this. The tree survey is one of the issues that I was going to bring up tonight, and I'm glad if that will be done. I was looking at the commercial guidelines, and I think if you could include a few more of the restrictions that are on commercial developments, if you're going to try to do a tree survey, one of the requirements that they have is that if a significant tree has to be removed, that it has to be replaced somewhere else on the property. So you might want to consider allowing him to remove a tree for a driveway if he plants another tree somewhere else. Another issue might be if a person buys the lot the way he's developed it and then they cut the trees, how are you going to restrict that? And is there as in the commercial, if any trees are cut that are not supposed to be cut, then nothing can be built for 3 years. Is that my understanding?
The concept plan would be made a part of each individual record or title at the RMC office,
mm-hmm.
and so anybody that buys that lot will have noticed that they have to comply with this concept plan before they build a house.
And if they don't, if they cut down the tree, then they're subject to the same little.
They violated the city code, and they can go to city court for. They can go to jail for 30 days or pay a $500 fine every day that that condition continues to exist.
That's for the builder, though. Now, once the house is built and sold, and somebody else owns it,
can they cut down everything on there?
That's probably a. If you were to cut down every tree in your yard, you could do that tonight if you wanted.
And I think that's I think that's something y'all are getting ready to work on. Anyway, right?
No.
Maybe working on no. It keeps coming.
Well, we've got a whole list of other things that we're going to work on first.
But our tree, aren't we a city of trees?
We certainly are. Have been for 27 years.
Exactly. We want to keep that.
We plant two trees for everyone we have to take down.
And the neighbors should as well. I know y'all do the best you can with the trees. I've got people at my house for dinner. I have to leave in just a minute. But I wanted to ask on the lady mentioned the trail that between the lots 3 and 4, that is an easement, I guess, for utilities. Is that right? I have my.
It's a storm drain.
That's a storm drain.
There's a storm drain that goes through there now.
Is there a way to require him to provide an access through those lots to the back somewhere? A trail?
Unless the city's going to go ahead and maintain trails back there, I'd say no.
Well, what about, just as a part of an open space?
If they wanted to go to a trail, which I'm sure Mr. Swindler would not like, we have an area to the very left of here that could lead back there. It wouldn't be between houses. But, our intention is not to open that area up for trails and for walking and other things of that nature.
Well, I gather there are some trails that have occurred naturally by people walking.
That's okay.
So you don't want to. Okay.
But to formalize trails back there for the general public to be using, that was not the intent, unless council decides at some later date they want to open this up to an open park type area for trails walking through it. Which I don't think is
so
what the neighborhood wants.
So the access can be through the city property near the well?
Yeah, the only thing that's fenced off right now is the well site itself.
So
the rest of the area that's in the circled area is a protected area that you can't put a house on, but it could be cleared, it could be lots of other things. That, again, is not the intent. And I don't think it's the intent of council in the future, based on what I'm hearing tonight, that this would be opened up for the public.
Okay. I was just trying to help these poor neighbors. And when you're talking about the water that's, rushing down the street and the dirt and the clogging of the drain, the ditch or whatever you want to call it, is it possible to require in a planned residential that driveways and other surfaces besides rooftop be of a permeable substance? I know y'all are having a bad problem with your stormwater these days going in Hitchcock Woods, and I think that every time somebody builds driveways and curbs, they're just adding to that. Is it possible to require that driveways not be paved? Is that a burden?
I mean, council could always do that, but are we going to start doing that throughout the rest of the city, that no driveway could be paved?
You might.
That's not the issue tonight, though, with this.
Well, if the issue is requiring certain things of a planned residential neighborhood, I think you require whatever you want that's reasonable.
Well, we can certainly talk about it. Sure.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do, is bring that up as a possibility.
I don't know if you weren't thinking when you talked about water going into Hitchcock Woods, this water, any water that would come off of this area would not go to Hitchcock Wood.
I hope not, no.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it goes the other direction.
Goes south.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if it's going into this delicate ecosystem and the lady's saying it's, rushing down the street, then having 12 driveways along there, with wide enough for two cars, it's certainly going to, you know, it's going to add to
it. I think Larry's already said that he's got to look at this drainage situation.
Good.
He's not with us to answer that.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm glad that so much of it is being left open. I appreciate that, and I appreciate, you know, the fact that it's not going to be 20-something houses, it is going to be 12. I wish it were going to all be city open space rather than any houses, but maybe we can just be a little bit more careful in the future. Watch out for each other. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak? If not, Spec
City. I'd like to speak if there's no one from the audience.
Oh, it's coming back. Okay, it's back to City Council then for consideration.
Okay. I'd like to give each of you one of these so that I can express my feelings about this, because I really, I've rarely been so frustrated about anything that we have done. And it's because of the minutes that I've both read and listened to. I think it's the City Council's responsibility, and I just want to go over this for everyone so you can see where I'm coming from. Mr. LeDuc gave me a letter he received from Mr. Gingrey on November 9th talking about the land on one side of Douglas Drive that he was interested in buying. On page 2, it's page 172 from a work session, the first time we talked about it on November 14th, 2005. Mr. Gingrey would like to, in the bottom, there's an underlined statement, Mr. Gingrey would like to build several new houses along the unused portion of Douglas Drive. Roger, at that same meeting, because I listened to the audio minutes, and that's not everything, of course, can't be written down, said that we could advertise it as single family R15 residential. That was an audio statement at that meeting. Pat Cunning said the city hires an appraiser and we get fair market value. Fred and Dick had a long conversation about how everything needed to be advertised. So we discussed it at length on November 14th. As I understand it, it was never advertised, and I'm not really clear at all on why that wasn't done. I'm disappointed, frankly, that it was not done. I think everybody would feel much better about it. I don't think that an average of $6,600 a lot is fair market value on the south side of Aiken for a 10,000 square foot lot. On page 3, February 27th, 2006, we talked about it again. Larry Morris, it says, has reviewed this request and feels the portion of land fronting on Douglas Drive could be sold, leaving the rear portion as a green space for our sanitary sewer and storm drainage. Then the third paragraph from the bottom, Mr. Larry Morris said he would recommend that a 200-foot square be reserved around the well. He said the property recommended for sale is about 9 acres. But nothing more about any more dense development. The next page is really just the beginning, because I didn't think you could understand the page after that. It's the Planning Commission meeting from July 11th, 2006. The first page is page 363, but the page that I'm interested in is page 364. Commissioner Reynolds clarified that the houses across Douglas Drive were developed by Mr. Gingrey and the lots average about 15,000 square feet. He asked Mr. Gingrey how he thought those homeowners would feel if the subject property was divided into 8,000 square foot lots. Mr. Gingrey replied that existing development was developed in the county. The lots had to be larger to accommodate the septic tanks, and this property in the city, it has sewer and water. Then, skip a paragraph, Commissioner Brough asked if City Council was aware of what was planned when they approved the sale. Mr. Gingrey replied, yes. Next paragraph, Commissioner Giobi said he wanted to be very clear on that statement. He asked whether City Council, at the time they approved the sale, fully understood that he was going to request a rezoning of the property. Mr. Gingrey said no. And we didn't know, as we said in our minutes of tonight, from that we approved of tonight's meeting. Then skip over to page 287, which is the first reading for the sale of the property on February 27, 2006. Mr. LeDuc stated last fall Bill Gingrey asked the city to sell property to him off Douglas Drive. He was the builder and developer of much of the property in that area and wanted to purchase several of the lots currently on Douglas Drive between our treatment facility and one of the wells. Ms. Larry Morris has reviewed this request and feels the portion of the land fronting on Douglas Drive could be sold. That was discussion that night. Second reading, page 305. Mr. LeDuc stated last fall Mr. Gingrey asked the city to sell property to him. Next paragraph in the middle of the page. Larry Morris has reviewed this request and feels the portion of land fronting on Douglas Drive could be sold, leaving the rear portion as a green space. At the very last paragraph, the motion was to sell land to Bill Gingrey for single-family residential detached homes along Douglas Drive for approximately $130,000. The next page, page 30 at the top left, is when we had a work session on August the 14th, and we were very confused, and I at that time said that we had not closed, and I was concerned about what I had learned about the rezoning of the property to be more dense, and I asked for clarification on a contract which had not been closed, and it was pointed out the time limit depends on the terms of the contract. But I haven't seen a written contract that required that we close the next day. At that point in time, August 14th, in these minutes, Mr. Smith, the city attorney, stated council agreed to sell the 11.58 acres of property to Mr. Gingrey for $130,000. That's brand new. Two paragraphs above that says the city advertised the sale of the property. We didn't. Finally, on page 14, the last page, that's the last page, I'm sorry. The point is that I'm trying to make is that none of us, according to what I can understand, ever understood there was going to be more than development along Douglas Drive. And the reason for that was because that's what was said in the minutes of these meetings. It was said in the minutes of the Planning Commission. Then we sell it. We sell more land than we've ever even talked about selling. We didn't have an ordinance to sell it. I am so totally frustrated at this point as to how this city council is going to function in order to be sure that what people tell us is indeed what we do or what they do. I can't imagine what people are going to do. I believe what is told to me in the meeting. And if Mr. LeDuc tells me something, as you did in the August meeting, you mentioned there would be six or seven lots on Douglas Drive. If that's not correct, then a representative of Mr. Gingrey needs to correct that for us before we have a sale. I'm only one member of City Council, but I, like you all, take a lot of time sitting here and listening. And I am so totally frustrated when all of a sudden it's not what I've been listening to. And I don't know where in the world that contract ever came from with the 11-point-something-something acres. I mean, that to me is just unbelievable. I just don't know. This whole process, I know, Beverly, you're glad they got together, but goodness gracious, why do they have to? I mean, look,
Jane,
at this.
Let me see if I can shed some light on one thing, and I don't know this to be the truth, but I'm going to say it, and Gary and whomever can correct me on that. But on the meeting where Gary says that we are going to sell I think it's your last page.
Yeah, it is the last
11.58
page.
11.58 acres. That's the total amount of property in the parcel.
Right.
And it might be that the contract had been drawn up and he had seen the contract, and that's where he pulled that number from. Is that right, Gary?
I'm sorry, Ms. Clyburn. I honestly don't remember.
Okay, but I'm saying that that is the total amount of property. And it might be, since they had already set the closing date and the contract had been drawn up.
Oh, I understand.
It's where the original mistake was made. But if you look at the motion says 9 acres.
I know. So why didn't the contract say that?
I don't know where that... Where, but, you know, I mean, we're all not without human...
The error came in the fact that the total property, which consists of 11.258 acres approximately, mm-hmm. was inserted instead of the plat that should have been 9 acres. So it's very clear, and we've talked about this, that the 9 acres at RS-15 is what council agreed to sell.
Right.
But I believe what Mr. Smith at that time was looking at the plat that was actually submitted with the contract purchase that was going to occur the next day. And that's where he came up with, which is what was mistakenly done. Instead
right.
of the 9-acre plat, the total plat was inserted there. But that was the mistake the city made.
Right. Well, I felt, too, that when I went to the Planning Commission and it was 9 acres with the road and the development and all that stuff, again, it didn't reflect what had been told to me in the meetings that I had attended. And I have not missed a meeting. And I know that that I think the Planning Commission, the last time they voted, felt that they either had to accept whatever, 28 houses, 18 houses?
25.
Or... the planned residential, which would at least be fewer. But my question is, what are we going to do when, for whatever reason, we have in our minutes that there are going to be 6 or 7 houses on Douglas Drive, and then there's a proposal that doesn't reflect that at all, and then we're told that we need to compromise?
But I don't see where Mr. Gingrey said it would be 6 or 7 houses.
The point is, though, Beverly, that when someone like the man on Tourbeck Road, when he has a proposal that comes to, or any developer, when they have a proposal that comes to City Council and an erroneous interpretation is given it by either the Planning Commission, which at the Planning Commission meeting they discussed the 15,000 square foot lots, or an erroneous interpretation is given to it by one of our officials, then it is the responsibility of the person to correct us so that I feel that we need to know what's going on. And it can't be, oh, I wasn't there, I didn't have a chance to correct you. Was he not notified of these meetings? Maybe that's it.
Talking about Mr. Gingrey?
Yes.
I think Mr. Gingrey was at one of the meetings, maybe not all of them, but he can speak to that.
The agenda did not even show anything about my project. You know, I wasn't present. A group of people, neighbors were here, added to the agenda the point that 6 or 7 acres was discussed at that meeting without my being there, knowing about it, or being able to That's the first time I've listened to every tape, just like the dog. That's the first time that the television brought
Yeah. Well, it wasn't mentioned by you.
No.
You know, a lot of things are mentioned during the course of discussion, especially this issue. We've had hours of discussion. A lot of things are mentioned. But, you know, what is the final thing is what gets put down in writing.
Correct. But my point is that we talked about property, lots of the same size as those predominant on Douglas Drive. On Douglas Drive. And that's where the six or seven units came in, because if you divide that property up into 15,000 square foot lots with the proper furniture, you're going to get about six or seven units.
But Jane, who mentioned six or seven units?
Mr. LeDuc did?
Well, I think he said the earlier discussions we've had about the same thing you bring up, is that he was estimating at that time.
Well, so was that, Mr. Planning when we first started. I remember the first time this came up, because I was so worried about it when it came up back in November the 14th. And we were talking about a similar development, as he says in his letter, to what he had previously built in that neighborhood on Douglas Drive. And when I saw that proposal for R8, I was just blown away, because I thought I supported what he wanted, what I was told he wanted to do, which was build along the unused portion of Douglas Drive and keep the land behind it as green space. And then, all of a sudden, at Planning Commission, there's this request for a road and all these lots in there and everything else. And we had a long talk about green space and how all the land on the back would be green space and how wonderful that would be. I'm just so completely frustrated with this process where we're always wrong. And we are.
I don't think we're always wrong at all. I think occasionally everybody's going to make an error, make a mistake, say something that perhaps is not right. You said something about we didn't advertise. We did advertise, too.
It was in the newspaper?
We have talked about this before. We've talked about the fact that nobody defined what advertising was. We did the same thing we always do on property.
Let me clarify that.
This is the first time, actually, that the property for sale was posted.
Was it advertised in the newspaper?
Not to my knowledge.
If you look at the minutes of that meeting, the very last thing that was said on November 14th was when I asked counsel for clarification. Therefore, what you're asking me to do is to post the property, because we have never posted even the property before, so we did post it. It was advertised in the paper for the second reading of the ordinance.
But it was already sold then.
Well, no, we always advertise before, you know, when you have a second reading of an ordinance, correct, Sarah, to let people know that that reading is going to come up. But
no.
The property itself was never went out there, and we didn't put an ad in the paper, a legal ad saying that the lot's for sale.
No, we did not.
No, we didn't. I didn't think that was the intent of council. When I heard advertising, I thought you meant advertising by posting the property and putting a for sale sign on the property, which was done.
Well, the posting did work, however, because there were some other folks who called in to ask about the property. This isn't to say, Jane, that we can't do a better job, because I think we can always do a better job, and I think we've learned a lot from this. But the fact remains, it was posted for, 3 weeks?
I'm not even talking about that.
30 days.
I'm talking about
we had calls by other contractors, I assume contractors, wanting to talk about the property.
Your question, I think, though, what can we do to make sure that this doesn't happen would be that. And this is why I've asked counsel, and I just need to ask more and more, is what conditions do you want on these properties? If we're going to sell property, if we're going to go ahead and put easements or whatever it is, we just need to be very specific what the conditions that you want, what regulations you want, and then we have something legally that we can enforce. Just like tonight you're asking that another condition be put here, condition number 10, which is going to be on the tree survey and looking at the trees. Probably my problem is I don't ask always enough questions.
Well,
to give you the information you always want.
Yeah.
But sometimes I don't know what questions to ask.
Well, my point, there's several, that's true of all of us. But we also stated numerous times, do you think $6,600 is fair market value for a lot in this location?
We talked about
being good stewards of the taxpayers' money.
The property was appraised by an appraiser, and the value was $117,000 for that.
Compared to a property 2 miles away, is that appropriate in an appraisal?
I think we all know that different property at different places bring different prices.
Right, that's my point, exactly.
I think once you put the...
And it was appraised.
The infrastructure in... it increases the cost of the lot.
But the structure is right up to
itself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that 6,600. 66 is just what you divided the 12 acres.
12 into $180,000.
Okay, but when he puts the water in the sewer tap and he pays all of that's figured into
sure.
the overall cost of
sure
the
it
lot
is.
Itself. So I'm thinking that even if that's the cost of the lot, when you put a house on it and the value has to come up to $165,000, you're going to get a pretty nice house over there.
I'm just, you can understand what I'm talking about. I'm completely frustrated with this process. I was trying not to vote against development that I felt was reasonable and was selling for a reasonable price, and I feel that I did due diligence by trying to look at the minutes and make comments that to clarify, and here we are again for the fourth time now since I've been city council where we haven't ended up with what we thought we were going to end up with. Mm-hmm. And
I do want to say that that in the number of years I've been sitting here, I have to tell you that there have been times when I've regretted doing some things. Sometimes you have to move on, and if we can't put something in place so we don't repeat the mistakes, then we will repeat them, but if we're not careful. But I think that we've learned a lot from this, and I think we need to move on, but I think we need to move on with a lot of education, knowing that whatever we didn't do right the last time, we need to make sure we get it right the next time. Maybe we need to formulate a policy. In one of your pages, it mentions that we do need to formulate a policy for the sale of property. And
18 to 20.
And we need to do that. We need to make sure that if we're going to go by a certain policy, then we will know that things will be done correctly.
Mr. Mayor,
I think it's just really time to move on.
Yes. Let me just say that and responding to Jane, no one likes to see this happen. And you are correct in saying that this has happened several times. And the way that I've accepted this is that a true human error was made. I've heard over and over with this one issue that this error was made, and I am personally convinced because I've spoken with Roger personally that things are in place where we would avoid this kind of error again. And with that, I have moved forward with saying that let's move on with doing the best that we can for the development of this piece of property. Now, at the last, the first reading, I voted against the development. And the reason for that is that I thought that it should be an RS-15, a remaining RS-15. Hearing what the neighbors have to say and having heard their change of heart, in addition to talking with Mr. Gingrich personally, I will vote to support this tonight because I do think that, and I'm convinced that we've got a very, very competent city staff, and we know based on our last meeting that all the things that's on their plate, it would be, I mean, we know that, and they truly don't do these things intentionally. And we've got to just look at what's there and just try to make the best of it.
Mr. Mayor, if no other council member has any comments.
Go ahead, Dick.
First place, I would like to associate myself completely with James' resume of what transpired. But I do have one question. Is Mr. Gingrich still here?
Yes.
We were told that this project had to be closed the next day. It was on the 14th of something, and the next day it was closed. Was an attorney used for the closing?
Yes, the city attorney.
Only the city attorney. Did you read the contract and the papers?
Did you
read the agreement? What took place? Were there any settlement papers, anything at all that passed that day?
Yes.
And did we not Was there no word that there were 11.263 acres being conveyed?
Yes, there was.
Did you notice that?
Yes, I did. That's, I drew the plat. I had that plat drawn.
But you knew it was 11.263 acres, and when you knew that we had all agreed to sell nine?
Let me, I listen to the tape, so.
Can you come up, please, Bill, again?
So we'll get you on tape.
Just a point of clarification.
Okay. And I'm glad you did,
because this is kind of important. On February the 22nd, Council had a first reading, unanimously decided to sell me the land, the acreage, and these words were spoken before this vote was taken. The acreage will be determined by a final survey and how much land Mr. Gingrey wants to buy. It could be 8.4 acres, it could be 9.5 acres, we just don't know. There was never a mention of fixed nine acres. So I assumed that I was able, that it was not fixed, that I could buy 11.3 acres, which is what I had the plat drawn up to. Larry Morris and I looked at it, he agreed with it, and that's what I submitted to the city to sell me the land, to sell me. Now, listen to the tapes. If there's something in there, that's what the tape said. I've listened to it several times.
And Larry Morris agreed to the 11.263?
Yes.
Okay.
What did the letter say?
The motion reads approximately 9 acres. It doesn't say exactly 9 acres.
I mean, that's what his letter is.
18 to 20% is not approximate in my world.
I'm missing it?
Yes, it doesn't say it here. The letter I wrote back, though, to him said 9 acres. The letter I wrote back to him said 9 acres.
I do want to make one other comment about planned residential. I hope in the future that the planning office will tell people that want to ask for planned residential that this exists, not just for flexibility. It exists for flexibility, but it's flexibility so we can save trees, so we can remedy, maybe not destroy the landscape in its entirety. I mean, that's why we made it flexible, to get something from it. And if we don't ask them, if they get all the way to Planning Commission, or for goodness sakes, all the way to City Council, and they've never had to do any of the things that made the reason for creating planned residential exist, what's the point, So we ought to get them to start on that earlier and not wait till the very last minute.
I'd like to say this. I think the way it's turned out, and I appreciate, as others have said, the working relationship that has made this come to this point is very good. It's less units. Mr. Gingrey could have walked out here tonight and built anywhere from 18 to 20. He could do that now, as a matter of fact, but he chose not to do that. And y'all have chosen what you've presented to us. And we preserve those other acres in the back for green space. So when we say we don't like the way this has turned out, I disagree with any type of statement like that. I think it's turned out for the best. And I also, for the record, want to say that this land was advertised. It was posted like we post and advertise everything else. That's not to say that we can't do it differently next time. And I propose that we meet sometime and just talk about this subject, Jane, and talk about how we can do a better job. And the other thing is, in my opinion, if there's a mistake that has been made, it's been made by all of us by not asking enough questions and making sure before we vote that we know exactly what we're voting on. Again, it's a lot of discussion goes on a lot of these issues, and we just can't take something that we hear somebody say and run with that necessarily. I, for one, I didn't know there'd be that many houses either. Jane, I agree with you.
Well,
when it came back 25, I didn't know that. I didn't know that because I didn't ask the question either. So I think all of us collectively could have asked more questions, and we can do that in the future to make sure that we don't run into this kind of thing where we're frustrated because we thought one thing and somebody else thought something else. But I think we've learned something, obviously, from this, and I think we all have. I know I have.
Mr. Mayor.
So I think we can do a better job next go around.
May I make a motion, please?
Yes.
I'd like to make a motion that we adopt a second reading of this ordinance, including the statement which Roger said as far as having our staff member, Tom Rapp, look at the trees and consider which ones needs to be kept.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, any
does
other
that discussion? Include all the other
yes.
conditions?
That includes the other conditions.
Okay. It includes
conditions.
What? Since we're going to be specific, let's be specific.
Well,
what does it include?
If you'll turn to the
good
to the page itself.
Yeah, I know.
They're listed out.
Page 2. Okay, any comments?
I would like to just make one more comment. And the neighbors have come. They have spoken. I was willing to fight for something else. But I'm glad that you've accepted. I think it's very unfortunate they've ended up what I call the Hobson's choice. It was either or. They're accepting not what they really want, not what they really deserve, but the only thing I think that they feel they can get. And on that basis, I am going to vote for it, but I just, because they're voted for.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Opposed? Passes 6-1. Thank you very much for all of your effort. Item 2 under old business is a resolution to recover property, property on Douglas Drive. Mr. LeDuc, please. Yeah,
this is a companion piece to the one we just approved. This resolution will allow us to reconvey the property on Douglas Drive from the portion that we agreed to sell him of 9 acres so that he would wind up at 4 acres. Based on $20,000 per acre or $60,000 for the first 2 acres and then $10,000 for the other acreage, he will in essence be buying 4 acres for $80,000. This resolution will allow us to pay $50,000 to buy back the acreage that he now owns and would be reconveyed to the city. So for your consideration, this is a resolution approving the reconveyance of a portion of property from William Gingrey to the city of Aiken for $50,000, leaving him 4 acres, which would be rezoned as PR.
Okay, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, with a whole lot of thanks, I'd like to move that we approve this resolution, that the property be reconveyed to the city.
I'll second. Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands. All in favor? Okay. Opposed? Okay, pass 6-1. Item 3 is a second reading and public hearing with ordinance to rezone property at 206 and 222 Charleston Street Southeast to single-family RS6. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to rezone 2 lots consisting of 0.7 acres of land owned by Mr. Jacobs and Mr. Patterson from light industrial to residential single-family RS6. The master plan that we have for this area indicated that all the property that not only was light industrial or general business should be reconveyed as residential wherever possible. So this certainly goes right along with what council and the planning commission are looking for. We're very happy to see this. The area currently is served by city water, sewer, and streets. The planning commission voted unanimously to approve the rezoning of this property to single-family RS6, and we had the first reading at the last meeting. This is second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone property at 206 and 22 Charleston Street from light industrial to residential single-family RS6.
Okay, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak on in this issue, you may do so.
My name is Doug Jones. I live 708 West Rollingwood. Y'all are kidding, right?
What are you talking about, Doug?
Well, I got property two blocks away, and I've been over backwards, and you guys made me go RS-10. Made me. Okay? And we're two blocks away, and you're going to do RS-6 for these folks? I don't get it.
Well, you just listened to us go from RS-15 to RS whatever, we don't know, in this last project. I mean, and it's on the same block.
What did I do? Well, it was unanimous. The zoning commission unanimous that if we do RS-6 on my property, and I do RS-10, and you're going to give these people RS-6, two blocks away. How about give me RS-6?
I think you know why we didn't want to do it RS-6, because there are large houses in that area, and they were hoping that development. I mean, we talked, you and I talked at length about the size. Wait a minute.
There was a handful of people on Cotton, a handful, that walked their dogs by my property. They don't walk all the way down to Charleston. That's the only reason they're not here.
Well, when you talked to me, you told me you wanted to build big houses on lots that were compatible with the rest of the neighborhood. I thought you meant that.
I do mean it.
Well, then what are you yelling at us about?
Okay, I don't mean the yelling.
Well, no, that's all right. I don't mind that a bit. Don't worry.
I'm
always
excited about this. How can y'all possibly give those people RS-6 and wouldn't give it to me? If you're going to give it to them, how about let's revisit my property? Is that fair?
I'm not sure that's fair at all. I don't know. I would have to look at this situation a little bit. I did not go down by your property. I've not seen this.
One of the differences, I do know, Doug, that when the situation came up in your area, there was a mixture of sizes of houses to the west of your property, and around your area was primarily RS-8 and larger. Predominantly in this neighborhood, there are much smaller size houses that are built, and most of the lots in the area are RS-6 now. So the further you went to the east,
can I finish? In New Ellington here.
You don't want me to? No. You've already interrupted.
No, I'm sorry. I interrupted you, sir. Go ahead.
As I was saying, is the further you go to the east, the smaller lot sizes are that are currently in place. The further you go to the west from your area, the larger the lot sizes. Council was looking for a way that could meet both ends and transition from the larger lots, the larger estates, to the smaller ones that are on Eastern Potter Colleton Avenue area. But again, if you look at the plat here, most of the lots that are in the darker shade are RS-6 currently. So it's compatible with the area. Your area was a transitional area, and that's why there was so much discussion that went on at the time.
The reason there was so much discussion was a handful of people on Colleton. That's why their discussion. If they hadn't showed up here, I'd have got RS-6.
No, I would have discussed it. Count on it. I would have.
All right. Are you for this? Jane, are you for this RS-6 over there on Charleston?
I think that it's more compatible. I don't like to see too many small lots, but I don't think this has any connection with what you do. We all know in southern towns, two blocks can make all the difference in the world in what kind of zoning there is and what kind of housing there is in any small town. Any small town. We know that. So, for you, I mean, good grief, and the last thing we took something as a comparable property that was 2 miles away, for heaven's sake. So, I mean, I have a big problem with that. But I do think that this block in character is so much different from the area where you are going to do your development. And I frankly don't think you could have done the quality kind of development that you wanted to do on RS6 lots. Unless that's not what you wanted to do.
Well, I didn't want to put up trailers in there, huh? Anyway, it's not right, folks. This is not right to box away, give these people RS6 and make me do RS2. Okay? It's not right.
Go back 1 minute. I'm sorry, going to the very back page. And that's all RS6 here, right? Here's the site.
Can we go over that map so we can know what you're doing?
Which map? Do you want to go? Well, one that's on the back page?
Where we look at the adjacent properties to this property, right?
Yeah, look at the back, yeah.
Well, that's the one I mean, right.
The very back page shows the RS6 that it's in the area. And several of the other properties that show it larger now actually have more than one house, like the property just the south of this one, which is just south of Thorpe. Actually, it looks like a large size lot, and it is, but there's three houses on it currently. And if you turn the page right before that, you would actually see on an aerial photography the lot that is larger just south of the property in question. And if you look at it very carefully, you could see three rooftops on it. It's just all by one owner, but if they ever want to subdivide, it would have to go into at least an RS6 or smaller to get the lot lines in there. There is a difference. You know, when Doug and his partner came to the city and asked for that, there was a lot of debate as to what size the lot should be because there was a mixture of lots all around it. There's some property that took up almost a full city block. And there was out of the property, catty corner, that was an RS8, primarily south of Colleton Avenue. So I recall there was a lot of debate. I'm sure there was some influence by individuals that lived on Colleton Avenue. But what I recall from that conversation was, how do you transition between the smaller lots east of there to the larger lots that were west of there? But again, council could look at this. It's the same situation, though, where both of them at one time were zoned light industrial. And if you look at, again, the previous page before this, and you look there right now along the railroad track, it's all zoned light industrial. Just south of Thorpe area is all residential multifamily. And that's why council said that at some point in time we would like to see all that area totally residential single family. And that's what's happening. In fact, you see right on the Charleston area to Berkeley, you just, I believe, rezoned in the last couple of weeks, Ed, was it Mr. Lott? Or who was the gentleman that came here with and asked that GB area rezoned to RS6?
Jarvis,
but was that RS6 also there? That was RS8. So where you see the GB on that, at Charleston to Berkeley, along Colleton, that's RS8, which is compatible with the other RS8. But how, again, it's how do you transition from one area to the next?
So the property on the back, on the west side of this lot, is zoned what?
RS6, currently. To the west of
at the corner of this
Charleston.
On Berkeley. At the corner of Berkeley and Colleton.
I gotta look at the other map.
On the south.
Is that the larger lot you're talking about? That can't be an RS6.
It doesn't look like it's
looks like
which 15. Lot are we looking at?
The
now?
One on the this one on the corner. South side of Berkeley and Colleton, southeast corner.
Yeah, the one that's like a block away. Charles, Colleton and Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that appears to probably be an RS8 lot, which is what it's zoned.
Are you looking at the back page, Jane?
Yeah, I'm looking at the back page and the second of the back page, which shows the RS8 zone. And I'm wondering why we didn't ask for that. Do you know?
For which lots now are you speaking?
Well, the one
of?
We're talking about. Because isn't the rest of it RS-8 on the back of it?
Okay. Again, if you look at that very packed page, the dark size lots, the ones that are real dark, are all right now less than 6,000 square feet. Or they wouldn't even conform to an RS-6.
But the zone, this land around it is currently zoned?
Light industrial and residential multifamily. Currently, from Colleton Avenue north, it's RML and light industrial. Is the current zoning.
And south of Colleton and at the corner?
As south of Colleton is RS-8, except for that one piece of property that was, up until recently, zoned GB.
Mm-hmm.
There was a quick shop there at one time, and
okay.
We had the properties along Berkeley come to us recently, and Ed's saying that they got rezoned as RS-8.
Are you going to give them RS? Are you going to give them RS-6 too? I mean, I jump through hoops for you folks. Mm-hmm. I'll let you tell me how. What kind of house to build, how big, what kind of siding, everything. I don't get it. Somebody explain it to me. What did I do wrong to you folks where you wouldn't give me RS-6 and I've done everything that y'all have asked? Okay? Right, Ed? I mean, everything. And two blocks away... Are you going to give RS-6 to the thing where the quick shop is too?
No, that's been rezoned as RS-8.
Okay. I don't. Am I confused here?
Doug, I mean, you got to stop and think. Some of us fought for you to get you from an RS-15, and you're throwing that out the window.
To what?
That we fought to get you from an RS-15 to an RS-10. We fought to get you an additional house in there to mm-hmm. make this property profitable for you. Now, you've forgotten all that.
I did.
Okay? You know, I didn't forget well, standing up here fighting for you.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, then I want you to act like you did.
I appreciate it. And I apologize to everybody in this room. I just get excited about this. It just doesn't seem right to me. There's a right and wrong in this world.
You think the property that you own is just of the same value as the property we're rezoning here?
That he's
talking about.
No. Probably not.
Your side is.
I hope it's not.
You bet. I was going to say. You would think so?
I want one of those $6,600 lots.
I know.
That's
yes. I do too.
That's right here.
This is all.
Doug, I just want to say that.
No, that's that, all light and dark.
That in an attempt to ensure that we get some degree of affordable housing in town, we need to do from time to time some RS-6s and some RS-8s. And this fits with an RS-6. A lot of them are RS-8. And most of the homes that are going in there will probably be more affordable than in other areas of the town. It's nothing personal against you. It's just where the property is, and two blocks away seems like a short distance, but it really is an area where we have a lot of affordable homes, and that's why the RS-6. And we're delighted it's going from industrial to residential.
Do you think it could be RS-8 and they have just two houses? Have we ever had the Planning Commission talk about that? Is the owner here? Or the person requesting it?
Yes. Could you come up, please, and talk to us about this?
I'd like to say, are you going to tell this man what kind of house to build? Like you did me? Yes or no?
Doug, just Google it, please.
Good evening.
Yes, sir.
I'm Jake Jacobs, and I live at 3603 Charleston Highway. And the question?
was wondering if you could, I think it would be better if you didn't cram three houses on this lot. I think it would be nicer to have two, frankly.
And well, then I'd like to see all the rest of the lots in that same area tear the houses down and change those to bigger lots, too.
Because those are the same size, is your point.
Same size, exactly.
That's my question.
Yeah, and that's what just was discussed with planning.
Uh-huh. What price range of homes are you going to put on those lots?
Actually, they're probably going to be in the neighborhood of $200,000 to $250,000.
Okay, so they're going to be narrow, deep homes.
That's the assumption. We have not actually set plans for those yet because we were waiting to see how this went.
So this is not going to be affordable housing?
No.
That's a relative term.
It is relative.
I didn't cut it with me. No, my...
not going to be what you thought, Mary.
Not going to be what I thought.
And are
you going to submit
to torn down then?
Some concept plan in terms of what this will look like for us?
Actually, I don't have plans to build at this point. I was just getting the property rezoned. And in all honesty, I'm rezoning it to residential out of self-defense. Because I own the property directly across the railroad tracks that I am renovating on 1316 Park Avenue, and I wanted to make sure that the property around me got rezoned residentially.
Good.
And so I bought the property strictly to rezone it residential and see where we went from there.
When you talk about building cottages, is that what
yes,
the phrase was?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Do you have any drawings or anything
no,
we can
I do
look
not.
At?
No, I've been looking at plans, but I don't have anything drawn.
Could you provide anything like that? That would be your general idea of what you would were going to do? Because I'm worried, now that you mentioned this, that the housing around there may disappear. Okay? The one that's on the R6 lot, the stuff that's on the R6 lots.
Actually, the property immediately adjacent across Thorpe is city housing.
Yeah, those are those affordable homes that the Housing Authority put in about 3 years ago.
Okay, that's right.
And that's the property that's multiple units on the larger lots.
And so, that's why I made that speech to him about the affordable homes, is because it's right next to that. I mean, it's right in the same area. And yeah.
I think that pretty well dictates what we're going to end up putting on those properties. Mm-hmm.
And those homes are now well over $100,000 each.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, at one time they were duplexes; they were very
That's
much run down.
Mm-hmm.
So there's quite a change in that one area. But they're going to be right now they're rental, but they'll be for sale in about 8-9 more years.
Okay. But to answer your question, I don't have any plans. We've looked at some cottage plans, but we don't have anything. And of course, the size of the lots dictate how big we can get on them.
Right, and that's what I'm concerned about, frankly. That's why I'm concerned about making it R6, and I wonder where the parking's going to go exactly and all that kind of good stuff, you know. And I'm wondering if the other houses around it are going to be staying there other than the city housing or disappearing. And if that happens, do we want that to all be R6? You know what I'm saying. I'm
trying
to think down the line about what's going to happen here.
I would, if you ever have an opportunity to go to Bluffton, go to Palmetto Bluff. There is a development down there called Palmetto Bluff, and it's done on the village concept, and they're very small lots. It's the old style community, very small lots with the ribbon driveways running down the side of the house, with the rear loaded parkings in the rear, and they're very, very attractive. And put the picket fence and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I was thinking what I might compare it to in Aiken, and I mean, if you're going to have that small, I was thinking those cottages Sam Erb fixed up. Those are small little shotgun houses, and I presume that's what you're talking about if you've got a little bitty lot. I mean, we have them right here. We don't have to go to Bluffton, but I just wonder about this RS6. I really do. I have a question about that, about if that's what we really want for the future in that neighborhood, you know, frankly.
I understand your question, but that's what's there. And I was just complying with the immediate neighborhood.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jake.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, are you ready?
Let's just quickly review the situation here as I see it, as I understand it. The lot that we're talking about is next to lots that are zoned limited industrial, light industrial. And across the street from that is also light industrial. Is that right? I'm looking at this map, this one right here.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And then behind that is the RML coming on down to the RSA.
To the south of there.
To the south. So, and around that also are mostly, if not all, RS6,000 square foot lots, or RS6. Is that right? Is that right?
Well, they're not RS6 because they're right now all RML and LI zone, but the size of the current lots that are in there are all under 6,000 square feet that are platted, except for along Park Avenue.
Okay.
The ones that have houses on it in that area along Charleston Street in Berkeley. But they're still all RML zone.
So the question, it seems to me to become, okay, we're in a transition now. We're going from RML on one side to basically surrounded on the other, each side and to the north, if you would, by light industrial. So we're here with the question, what size should that be? I mean, what zone should that be?
Can we ask for designs to see what, I mean, some designs are appropriate on little lots like that and some aren't, or can we not?
You can certainly make that a condition of approving the rezoning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can not have the zoning become official or rezoning become official until such time as the developer satisfies certain requirements, which may be plans that you want to look at and that sort of thing.
I just think that Mr. Jones needs, you know, is going to have to do that, and I do think he has a point.
The problem we start getting into, Mr. Smith, from a staff standpoint, is trying to identify putting out a condition on an RS6 lot or an RS8 lot that is typically not put on those types of lots,
right.
Which is trying to weed through design review of these things. And I know you made that a condition of the lots that Mr. Jones has, but again, under the different other types of rezonings that we had for these one or two lots, RS6, RS8, we have not put that type of condition on, looking at house designs.
But we didn't do for RS10 before that, did we?
You know, and if we're going to really do that, then we need to, again, be revisiting what should our zoning ordinance be saying for these rezonings for these different lots, because it's going to be very difficult for Ed and his staff to say, well, now which lots are we supposed to be reviewing for house design, which ones are we not going to be reviewing, which is why we try to have that PR category so that we could put the conditions and what types of house designs or concepts you want to have on it. I'm just afraid what's going to happen is a year, 5 years down the road, Ed may not be here anymore. The staff's going to, it's going to slip through, and we're not going to know exactly what type of house designs are supposed to go on each of these individual lots that we start rezoning throughout the city.
But I thought the Design Review Committee was looking to expand their horizons to include the Old Lake and Master Plan area.
That is correct. So once that happens, then you'll have the Design Review Board be looking at that, and they could be reviewing all these different house designs from a design of what's appropriate for those particular neighborhoods, unless council's going to start getting into stating what kind of designs you actually want in different areas.
But don't you think we need to worry about that? Because something they could get control of it after something went in that was completely inappropriate.
In the past, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be concerned about it, because I think we all are, But it's been a market-driven situation that the marketplace as to what people are paying for the property and how they're developing the property has typically in the past driven what's going to be there. Again, we should, I think by the end of the summer, we're hoping that the design review for the eastern edge of the city, including this area, Ed, would be under design review board. So, yes, this is moving very quickly to be under the design review board. Again, we're just waiting to come up with what conceptual design elements are we looking for along Richland Avenue on the east side, Park Avenue on the east side, which now is primarily industrial, and we have no design concept. So that's what we're waiting on. But once that happens, then the design review board will be able to have some authority, some control over that, to review it. I just would hate to get the staff involved, the council involved, and every house that comes ready to be built in those areas.
We're not going to be involved in all of them, just when there's a rezoning, right?
My question would be, what is the determining factor for us to review, when there's a rezoning, to review whether it's the design? Why should we ask for an to review plans for an RS-10 versus an RS-6 or an RS-8? Or an RS-15? What is, if you do it for one, how does staff determine that? How should I, as a council member?
Well, again, that's why it's the overall plan is to get all the north side to have a review, which should be consistent by the design review board, and their review is going to be predicated on the character of the homes that are currently in that area. In this particular area, if you go down Thorpe, I believe it is, there are a number of different, no, it's not Thorpe, it's the next street over, but there's a number of cottages, very nice looking cottages, mm-hmm. that they've done some renovation to. Bill McKay, in fact, is the one that bought them and renovated a number of them. Well, that was the character of this area. A lot of them at one time were rented out to groomsmen, other people that worked at the track area. And I would assume that that's the concept that the design review board will use as they start looking at new designs. For instance, in this particular area, I don't think we have any two-story homes. So they're probably going to be looking at saying, well, if they come in with a two-story home, that's not really appropriate for this area. One story or story and a half would be appropriate.
And, I mean, you want to see three Charleston-style houses on this
property? Right, and so they're going to use that conceptual design elements for their review process, whereas a cottage, being one or one-and-a-half stories, would be more appropriate because it would fit into the overall conceptual design elements that are currently in that area.
So dealing with this issue, dealing with this ordinance as we see it, am I to assume that if and when Mr. Jacobs and Mr. Patterson decides to build on this property, that it is going to be, just assume not, that it is going to be in keeping with what is already there?
If the design review board, if you give the design review board control over the conceptual plans for each of these homes that are going to be built in these areas, yes. That has not been done yet. It's in the process, and we were going to go ahead and take it in areas. We're going to take the east side first, then the northeast side, then the northwest side. We believe the northeast and the northwest side are going to be a lot easier because there's already design elements built in for those areas. I would hope that by this fall that would be coming back to City Council. Then you would have the assurity that there would be a body or authority that you have given that direction for, could make those decisions. That was one of the things that we got into a debate on the houses at Colleton and Williamsburg is right now it's not in that area for review by the design review board. But you said, let's make sure the design review board looks at this, and Mr. Evans and the chairman at that time, I think it was Philip Mary, Ed, looked at it as to what those design elements should be in that area and gave that information to the developer. But eventually, all of this should be under their preview.
Why shouldn't we do the same thing here?
Again, you could. We're a whole lot closer today than we were a year and a half ago when this other property, in other words, this should happen this fall. Now, I feel pretty confident of that, if council approves it.
But these houses will make it be started before then.
That's not what he's saying, but yes, they could be. I mean, if you wanted to have total control over it, then we'd have to come up with some language to do so.
I don't know that. What can we do? I mean, what did we do, like Mr. Jones talked about?
What we did at that time, and again, Mr. Evans could correct me on this one, you said that the planning director and the design review board chairman would sit down and look at the various elements that would be associated with these homes, and to keep it under their preview. None of those were going to go to the... I guess if you all couldn't come to a decision, in other words, if Ed had an opinion and the chairman had a different opinion, then it would go to the design review board to kind of break the tie. But if the chairman and Mr. Evans both agreed, then they could make the decision on the design for that home. So there, again, we weren't jumping through more than hoops than we had to at the time. So if you wanted to do that, we could, with the hope, and my desire would be that we eventually get Mr. Evans out of this whole thing and give it to the design review board.
Yeah, but I'm just saying right now, that's an important lot. He's right, and he's going to protect his property values across the way, and it really matters what it looks like. Mm-hmm.
Currently today, if somebody wanted to across the street, they could build apartments in there without approval by council because it is zoned RML.
Well, it's currently zoned light industrial, so there's no telling. And
in
what he's doing
area,
is protect.
Right. Right. That's correct.
So he's trying to protect that. I don't know whether there's any more comments or questions, Mr. Mayor. If not, I would
like to ask Ed if he would come up and talk us through a couple of these things, if you would.
While it's coming up, I would just remind council that one of the things that the developer agreed to do on Doug Jones's property is he agreed to put restrictive covenants on all the lots before he sold them that would require him to go through the design review process. And so that was an agreement that Mr. Jones made.
That's correct.
So that would, council couldn't impose that. You could, and then just deny the rezoning, okay? But they actually agreed that they would allow those restrictive covenants to be put in place on those properties so the design review process would go through.
So we could do that on this, too?
If the developer agreed.
Uh-huh.
Ed, it appears certainly that what this gentleman wants to do here with this lot, Mr. Jacobs, meets the comprehensive plan. It's compatible. I'm just reading through here again. It's fairly surrounded, not totally, by light industrial. Is that why planning department suggested RS6? Or
we didn't suggest RS6.
That was the recommend.
We didn't recommend. That was a request from the applicant.
Okay.
So we do not make recommendations.
Okay. But what you, I beg your pardon, I'm sorry to imply that. But what you did say, though, that meets the criteria of a comprehensive plan and everything else that we have to judge by.
It meets the comprehensive plan because the comprehensive plan recommends, or the Old Lakin Master Plan recommends low-density residential detached. And that's
right.
RS6
right.
would comply.
Of course, if Mr. Jacobs asked for RS8, that would meet it as well.
Correct.
And assuming, or RS10 maybe even, I'm not sure whether the lot's big enough.
It would.
It would be.
It would.
So he could have asked for any of those.
Yes.
Those three things. I just wanted to make sure I understood that it did meet the criteria that we had. What he was asking for, I met the criterion that we have to apply to his request in the way of procedures.
Which is really the comprehensive plan, the Old Lakin Master Plan, and yes, it is consistent with that.
Right. Okay.
And I do recall also from Doug's transaction, he's taken an entire block, if you will, on Colleton. Almost all the properties within a block of that were RS8 or more. There were RS10, some big properties. It was mostly R8 and RS10. What we got here is a situation where it's either industrial or what it, or RS6. The homes are all in that RS6 size. I think it is a transition towards, and I hear what you're saying, Doug, but I don't really quite agree that it's exactly the same
thing.
Situation.
Yeah, I don't either. I think they're two separate situations here.
But I do think the design is important, and if there's some way that's not too onerous, that he can get what he wants, and we can get the protection that we feel and that we need, and the fairness in regard to, you know, and to other people. Is that a terrible thing to ask, if there would be some kind of a covenant for an architectural review of the design review board, or...
The plans have to go before the building inspector before you can build anything. That doesn't have anything to do with the way it looks, though. It only has to do with setbacks and safety and things like that. I don't understand really what the issue here is, because I don't have plans drawn. The concept is cottages. That are compatible with what's in the neighborhood, and you know, as far as the preliminary design review, I don't have anything prepared, and I am not prepared to do that.
What if there would be a covenant that was just like Mr. Jones was talking about, that when someone bought it from you, it would need to be a cottage design with plans?
I think we're comparing apples and oranges. Mr. Jones' property is in a whole different world, although it's only two blocks away. And I am reluctant to place design restrictions on a lot that's going to be valued less than a quarter of what he has valued his lot.
But a $250,000 house is a nice house, as far as I'm concerned. I think $250,000 house is a nice house, and I think it could have a good design or a not good design.
Well, again,
or a compatible design.
That depends on taste.
I know it does.
Yeah.
And we've learned to our regret that sometimes we haven't asked for some restrictions.
All I can say is look across the street at what I'm doing and make your decision based.
And if you don't know where Mr. Jacobs is talking about, it's a big, beautiful home that I think Sam Erb owned at one time, right there on Park Avenue.
It's a decent house.
Huh?
It's a decent house.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful home. And I'm personally not concerned about the type of homes that Mr. Jacobs would build. I think he would build an extremely nice home, no matter where he's building.
Huh? He's not building.
Well, I think he lives across the street from it. I don't think he's going to sell it to anybody that's not going to build a nice home or homes. That's my personal opinion. Jane, you want designs? I don't want designs necessarily. We don't have a ordinance that says that we have to have designs. Now, if we want to get one, that's fine. That's fine. We can pursue that. But we don't have one now. So, as far as I'm concerned, we either vote this up or down, you know.
Mr. Mayor.
We can talk all night about designs and what have you, and we can go through every issue that we get talking about it. If we want an ordinance that gives us the authority to do that, then we need to sit down and talk about it and develop one.
Well, how did we have the authority to do it on Mr. Jones's property?
Mr. Jones volunteered to do that.
He agreed to do it.
He agreed to do it. Correct.
That's right.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to make a motion. Before making that motion, I do want to say that given the fact that this area is zoned light industrial currently, and Mr. Jacobs and Mr. Patterson, Mr. Jacobs especially, is concerned about what across the street will look like based on his personal investment in his home across the street. This area is currently has RS6 properties already. I move that we approve this ordinance to rezone the property 206 and 222 Charleston Street to single family RS6.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any further discussion?
One just point that I'd like to make, that the discussion that's been going on for the last little bit hopefully in 6 months would be a moot point, because we'll be coming back to City Council asking you to give the Design Review Board the authority to make review of these properties that would be renovated or built in that entire area. So hopefully this is not even, you know, you're asking, I believe, Mr. Mayor, about, you know, what criteria. Well, that'll be the criteria, and that'll be coming back very soon.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Opposed? Okay. Passes 6-1. Okay. Moving right along. Item 4 is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to abandon a sewer line and accept dedication of a new sewer line easement for the Shops at Whiskey. Mr. LaDuca, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance authorizing the City of Aiken to abandon a sanitary sewer main right-of-way and accepting the dedication of the sanitary sewer main to the Shops at Whiskey. Well, the Shop at Whiskey were built at Whiskey and Corporate Road, the Corporate High Parkway. There is a sewer line in there that had to be abandoned. What you'll have before you tonight is accepting the new sewer line easement and then giving up that old easement. You had first reading at the last meeting. This is second reading and public hearing of an ordinance authorizing the City of Aiken to abandon a sanitary sewer main and right-of-way and to accept the deed of dedication of the new sanitary sewer main at the Shops at Whiskey.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading public hearing of this ordinance. If anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I approve, recommend we approve this, or I move to approve this ordinance to abandon the sewer line easement.
Okay, I'll second that. Any discussion? Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 5 is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to modify the lease purchase agreement for a home in Tool Hill. Mr. Duke.
Yes, sir. This is our ordinance authorized the City of Aiken to revise its lease agreement with an option to sell property in the Tool Hill area at 804 Dillon Avenue. You entered into an agreement approximately 3 years ago. That time period has expired, and we have been working with the homeowner to try to get financing a little bit different than the conventional due to some other conditions. So we're asking that they be given another 6 months to September 1st to obtain private financing for that home. This is the second reading of the ordinance to modify a lease purchase agreement with Brendan Jenkins for an extension of 6 months.
Okay, so
Mr. Mayor, I move that we...
Oops, just a minute.
Nope.
This is a second reading and public hearing. Also, this ordinance, if anyone would like to speak on it, you may do so. Okay, it's back to City Council. Don.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve the second reading and public hearing to modify this lease purchase agreement.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item six, second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend the noise ordinance. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending Chapter 22 of the City Code of Aiken, South Carolina, to add new Section 2231 regarding noise violations. We had a lot of discussion on this at the last meeting. Mr. Pierce went back, took out a few sections that seemed to be causing a little bit of concern, talked to public safety, was able to work out again some of those details. But let me try to make this as clear as possible that it's still, this ordinance, once it gets approved, is not going to be the end all that will solve every noise problem. I read something in the talk deck where somebody said, well, you know, I want to make sure that no noise crosses that invisible boundary between myself and my neighbor. You know, that's impossible. That'll never be able to happen. But, and all this does, where public safety, they'll be able to have a decibel meter, and if they're standing outside their vehicle 50 feet away from the noise, and it's over a 75 dB level, they'll have something they can prosecute. But it's still going to be, in almost every case, when that disturbing or nuisance noise occurs with a neighbor, that they're going to go ahead and have to work with us to go to livability court to try to take some action with the neighbor to take care of what they, in their opinion, is a disturbance at their residence. You know, it bothered me a little bit when I read that, because this is not the intent. It's not going to stop all those noises. That's going to be impossible. But if something is what's aggravating to me may not be aggravating to Mr. Pierce, which may not be aggravating to Ed Evans or someone else. So it's again, it's going to be up to that individual to work with us, to work with Mr. Pierce. If they feel there's a disturbance out there, that we would then work with them and bring it to court to resolve the issue. So I believe this is a much stronger ordinance than we had in the past. It's one that we feel very comfortable with. It's also a situation that if we feel there is an issue, or we feel like we've taken this as a model ordinance from other communities, it's proven itself in court, and we feel it's a very reasonable and it's a good ordinance to upgrade all the ordinances that we've had in the past concerning noise. So for your consideration tonight, this is second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend Chapter 22 of the City Code regarding noises about the noise violations.
Thank you, sir. This is second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so.
Mayor, if I could just briefly address Council, we really think we've got something that's enforceable, that's workable. It has the decibel meter measuring as part of it. It is not the entire ordinance. When you think about it, public safety is trained. If they look at a lawn of grass, they could see the dandelion sticking up. That's what they do in DUI cases. There's somebody in traffic. There's just something not right about their driving. So it is with noise. There's some noise that is above the rest. And you'll see we put that in the ordinance. I've talked with the folks that will be monitoring the festivals downtown, as well as the patrol officers. They're much more comfortable with this version, and I think it behooved us after first reading to take a good, solid look at this and find out what would be best to have in it. We certainly can look at it at a future time and measure how the enforcement efforts have been with the new ordinance. I'm just so glad we can say goodbye to Victrola's steam whistle. That's right. But we're ready to work with this new and improved model.
Okay, Richard, thank you so much.
Is this compatible with the county ordinance?
You raise a good point, Ms. Walker. Without going into much detail, I think you'll find that the county ordinance only relies on noise levels, and quite frankly, that county ordinance, which was done back in 1994, was part of some litigation in Common Pleas Court, and the judicial officer who heard that particular case expressed frustration with the way that ordinance is crafted. And that's why we got away from the county ordinance and looked more at city ordinances across the state. And you'll find our new improved model more in line with what other cities in South Carolina are using to address noise issues. Gary told you earlier that in city court, someone could pay a fine or serve time in jail. But in addition to that, under the existing city code, we actually are entitled to obtain abatement orders where nuisances can be abated. So with the livability court that you approved a year ago, these orders can be appropriate as well. So there's several tools now that are available to hopefully control noise issues.
Very good. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this issue? You certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to say that Jan Smith, who was here last time and I thought made some very good comments, sent me an email this afternoon to tell me that she had read the revision, and she said it's a very good ordinance as it is. So.
And Council Member Smith raises a good point, because I think she's going to take our city ordinance and get back with some of the county folks and have some discussions about updating their ordinance.
Good, good, very good. Okay. Any discussion? Do we have a motion first?
Move for approval, Mr. Mayor, of this on second reading.
I second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor. Okay. Passes unanimously. Under new business, first reading of an ordinance to annex .094 acres on Richland Avenue West. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken, certain property consisting of .94 acres of land, more or less owned by Liza Incorporated, and to zone the same general business. This property is next to the Quality Inn and Suites, and you see that there are a number of conditions, seven of them that are listed. All of these are fine with the person who would like to annex it, except there are two areas that I believe Mr. Holly is going to get up and talk about. The one, which is item number three, about the stub out, they want to have a little bit of minor language change on that, which is no problem, to give a little more clarity about talking about future vehicular traffic. But item number four is the area that's been a problem area for several months trying to work out, and so that's the one area that council probably needs to concentrate or to have further discussion on that with the current owner. There is going to be a condition on it, though, that I think is important that we were all able to agree with, and that is on the 2,000 number of trips being that or less. If for some reason this would change and we could only think of one type of operation currently that would probably have more than 2,000 trips in this particular area, and that's not the intended use, but if it got over 2,000 trips per day, then there would have to be a traffic study made of this area. So for your approval tonight and consideration, it's first reading of an ordinance to annex .94 acres on Richland Avenue west of the Huddle House as general business, and upon consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay, sir, thank you. Did Mr. Holly want to speak? Where's Jim? There he is.
You'd have to suspend the rules.
Oh, yes. Okay, let's suspend the rules. If to have a motion and a second, so Mr. Holly and anyone else can speak on first reading.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, thank you for your courtesy in hearing from me. I'm going to keep it very brief because obviously this has to go to second reading. On the traffic study condition, we might want some clarifying language in there that fits in exactly with what Roger said, because the way it's written now doesn't pick up what Roger said about there being a future use that might trigger the traffic study, to make sure that's understood. And the other issue concerning the sign on the site, we're going to try to work to find some solution to that that will be satisfactory to all concerned, and we'll have to come back with you to you on that with a proposed solution. It will take some work on our part to accomplish that, and right now we don't have the answer for you, but hopefully we will. As you may know, there's been some effort to get the sign removed. It's been unsuccessful at this point. Right. And we're going to try to find some other solutions to that that the city would find satisfactory.
Okay. So, Jim, excuse me. If this is passed on first reading with these conditions, I think that what you're talking about is a freestanding sign?
Yes, sir.
For the adjacent motel be removed from the site. That's
yes.
What you were talking about.
Yes, sir. That we might suggest, and I can't do it tonight, some other language that would satisfy council, but yet give us the flexibility we need to be able to develop the site, or for anybody to develop the site.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I think it'd be premature to try to fashion that tonight, unless, Mr. The language I had suggested was that the sign be removed, or that the site otherwise be excluded from the site in a manner that's acceptable to the city.
Do you understand that?
I do, but I think what Jim's trying to convey to you is he wants to work it for 2 weeks, and he's okay with you passing it tonight as the ordinance is presently written.
Okay.
He's letting you know that he may have some modifications to the ordinance when we come back for second reading, I think.
Okay.
And that's what I was trying to convey. I appreciate my colleague helping me with that.
Well, perhaps I wasn't listening very well.
No, but I did want at least to alert you to the areas where we had some concerns, and that we can come back and hopefully have a solution that will satisfy council, and something that the owner can
And the other one is on traffic? Is it?
Yeah, the way it's written right now, it says you can never have more than 2,000 trips at the site per day. As we understand how the ordinance is supposed to be administered, it would be, it's limited to 2,000 trips per day. If another use is proposed for the property that triggers a higher level, then the owner or subsequent owner has to comply with the traffic management ordinance and would have to do a traffic management study and abide by the results of it.
At that time? At the time it goes over the 2,000?
Yes, and that's what we wanted to understand. It could be a different use. Somebody may redevelop the property to another use. It would have 3,500, estimated to have 35 visits per day. Then at that point, before the property can be developed for that, you'd have to do a traffic management ordinance and comply with the findings of that. And I just want to make sure that the condition captures that.
Right, right. Is this for the McDonald's, or are you prepared to say?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm not prepared to say.
Well, that was discussed, Mr. Mayor. I attended the planning meeting, and that was discussed in the planning meeting. The issue was the two signs, whether we could have the, based on the lack of cooperation with the current owner with the signage, and that issue you work in right now. Is that?
Yes, ma'am. We're trying to find a suitable solution for that. It's not going to be easy, but we're dedicated to try to accomplish that.
We want to congratulate Mr. Shaw. I think you received an award recently.
Yes.
And that award was?
Hilton Hotels Corporation Developer of the Year.
Congratulations to you.
Yeah. Congratulations.
If y'all can find him a little bit more land there, maybe.
You want to make some more land?
Yes. Thank you for your time.
Oh, okay. Would you like to speak or say anything?
Nothing specifically on my point, but if you have any questions for me, then I'd be more than happy to address anything you have.
Okay, I beg your pardon. What's your name?
Neil Shaw.
Neil Shaw, okay.
He's different from the other Neil Shaw.
Oh, I am different from the other Neil Shaw, who also lives here.
Yeah, you're taller.
I am taller. I was raised here all of my life from the point I was one until I went to college back to USC. Okay. I was born in Columbia. So, and then from there, I've been in Atlanta for the past 8 years for regional development there. But we still have a home here in Woodside, and still pay my taxes.
Good. That's the main thing I wanted to find out.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thanks, Neil. Nice to meet you.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Appreciate it.
You look great.
Thank you.
That's getting late.
Right.
We already hope you don't listen to me.
Yes, we did.
We did.
No, we didn't.
That's right.
You need to go to
work. Yeah. It's later than I thought.
Yeah. You need a motion.
Okay, we need a motion in a second, please.
Move to adopt this ordinance of first reading to annex the property on Richland Avenue West.
Second.
Okay, any discussion?
One item here. If for some reason you want us to delay the second reading because you're still working some things out, just let me know. Otherwise, the intention we'd be to this would be on the 26th for second reading.
Good. Okay. If there's any discussion, if not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 2, first reading of an ordinance to adjust city council salaries. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending Section 2-36 of the Code of the City of Aiken to amend the salaries of the mayor pro tem, and the members of City Council. We've had a discussion about this for years, and I'm the one that brought this up again. Every year, our human resource director has been challenged to review 25% or more of each of our classifications. A classification would be a maintenance worker, vehicle operator, etc., to make sure that those salaries are competitive to the other salaries within the CSRA area and then the state, all the different governments. Well, every year we've been looking at the city council also, And so this year I said, I'm just going to go ahead and give it to you because I really feel that you're undervaluing yourself and the city of Aiken. When I look at the salaries that are being received by the average cities, now this is not, and I don't look at the city of Aiken as being average. You know, we're far above average. We have been looked at throughout the state as the most progressive city, the most innovative city. I think we won the Municipal Cup for the highest recognition within the state, 14 in the last 16 years. The other cities call us up and say, which category are you going to compete in this year? Because we don't want to compete in that area. You know, we're recognized for excellence in the city. And so to even say that you should be compared with the average city is, in my opinion, an insult to you and to our city, because we are not average. We're far better than average. Well, the average salary within the state for city council members, when we looked at it, was $8,718. Your salary currently is $3,800. Quick math says you should be getting paid at least $5,000 or higher. The mayor's salary throughout the state, $14,681. Our mayor's at $11,419. So after looking at all this, we are making a recommendation to you, and I hope you accept this because of what you do. And you get worked very hard, and with us, then we will feel we could even work you harder in the future, have more meetings with you. But we are recommending that the salaries be increased, and this will not happen today. So if you pass it at the next reading, this will take place after the next election. So if there's an uproar in the city and they say, well, that's you're voting in an improper salary, they could do something about it. But we're recommending that council member salaries go to $9,000 after November 2007. Mayor pro tem would be at $12,000 and the mayor would be at $15,000. So for your consideration, this is first reading of an ordinance to approve the new salary levels as proposed, and upon your consideration, a second reading and public hearing will be held at the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second, or any comments before we want to talk about it?
I'll make a comment if you want me to. I've never been for this. I don't think the increases are enough to make that much difference to anybody. I think there are plenty of people that would serve on city council for nothing. I've said that for the last 6 years. And on a night when we haven't been able to produce the leadership, which produces a contract that reflects our ordinances and haven't sold land for what it's actually worth, I don't know that we really deserve a salary increase. And so I'm not going to vote for it.
Okay, we thank you for your opinion.
That's it.
I think this council has been it's worked very well together with the citizens. That we've done many things. Roger's laid out a few of them. You know, over the years, and we all know this, as we grow, we get busier and busier and busier. And I think it's a really sad reflection that the salaries are not higher than they are. I've talked to a lot of citizens, and they are appalled when they find out what some of our salaries are. And say, gee, I don't know why you do this, I don't know why you do that. We have to deal with people that are making six figures and high six figures. Some of us do that every day. And it's fine. I mean, we don't have to be elected, we don't have to run for election if we don't want to. But I just think that at least for the council members, I mean, I make more than the council members do. I just think it's each of you certainly deserve an increase for what you do. If you look at our schedule this month, for instance, we have four meetings, I think, maybe even five. But I think we have four meetings this month, and it's not going to get much better. We've got a list of 20-some items that we talked about with planning that. Who knows how many of those will get through. But we're going to have to come up with ways in which we can address each of these issues quicker. And that's going to mean more meetings. And I think it's going to mean more meetings on city council, even if we have to go to a committee system like the county does. to get through some of these issues quicker. But I think we've got to do something. So I support it because I think it's the right thing. I think a city council deserves it. I just think it is. We certainly pay our employees at a good level. I think anybody that's in business, whether it's a doctor's business, Jane, your nurses, whatever, you pay them a good salary, a fair salary. And anybody that's in any other business pays, Don, you pay your employees a fair salary. And I just don't even think council gets a fair salary. That's what I'm saying. And when we say average, I mean, that's just average. And we're below, well below average. So that's my two cents worth in this thing. And,
Mr. Mayor.
I think it's deserved by city council.
Mr. Mayor, I agree with you. I've been on city council for 5 years. I think a lot of people know that, and I think a lot of them believe it. I never really wanted to be on the city council in the first place. And what I have found over the 5 years is that I actually spend more money because I'm on the council than I ever get from it. And it has to do with the things you have to attend, the things you have to do that you wouldn't otherwise do. So therefore, I do think a raise is a fair and good idea. And I hope you will all not hold back because it's an election year or anything else.
You know, it's just a shame the council has to vote on their own salaries. I mean, that's the way the system's set up. But we haven't done that. We haven't done that. Have we done it at all in the last 20 years? We haven't done it. And the only way we're going to come up to any kind of an average is if we think it's worthwhile, if it's appropriate, if it's deserved, then we just have to do it. And
currently, the only thing council could is every 2 years there's a cost of living adjustment based on whatever the employees get. So that's typically 2%. So if you did not put anything in here, come November of 2007, would go up 4% your salary for the last 2 years.
Are there any other comments?
Mr. Smith and I did agree, we talked about it a while back, that we are at least average.
Right.
I said you and I did agree on one thing, that we are at least average council people.
Yeah, you mean the mayor pro tem is average.
You're average.
I think one of the things, and I don't know if this affects you, Dick, but one of the things that does affect me is that whenever there's a program, you have to buy tickets and you have to go. Yes. You have to be there. Whenever they're requesting ads, you have to put ads in the booklets. Some of them could be $100. Some of them could be $150. They expect you to do that. And it is time-consuming, but I don't have any youngins that I have to pay babysitters for, but I do know that it does take quite a bit of time, and I do think that we are, with all our human failings, we are above average. I think we are. I think we attend meetings maybe more than other bodies around town, and I think we at least deserve a little bit more than that.
Billy, one thing you didn't add in, and I know you do it a lot because I know I have some idea of what your schedule lacks most of the time, but we are asked to speak a lot.
Yes.
in neighboring areas. And yesterday, as badly as I felt, I was in Trenton, South Carolina, at the Mount Sinai Baptist Church, speaking on behalf of the city for the families and Friends Day. The time that you take to prepare your good message, in addition to the drive, I never turn in any mileage at all, and I do that on my expense, and that happens a lot. It could be in Georgia, somewhere in the rural areas, but we're constantly called to represent the city, and I don't share that. We just do it, and that happens frequently within a given month. So, and none of us are in it for the money. God knows,
it doesn't cover my, between the travel and my cleaning bill, doesn't cover that, so, but you do it.
Any other comments? Okay, do we have a motion or a second? And a second.
I'll be happy to move that we do this.
I'll second.
Okay. Now, any more comments? Okay. Show of hands, all in favor. Okay.
Opposed?
Okay. Passes 6-1. Item 3 is approval of the Planning Commission Action Agenda for 2007-2008. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. We met on March 5th with the Planning Commission, and we developed an action agenda for the upcoming year. You have that before you. You have 10 items that will be on their agenda. They're taking up items number 1 and number 2. I know at this next meeting, assuming they have some time and get to it, we already have hopefully a resolvement on number 3. So we're moving along on these items, and we think this year they could make a lot of progress on it. You'll also agree that the Design Review Board would undertake 2 tasks. One would be to develop design standards for buildings along major roads, and number 2, how the property maintenance should be enforced. Currently, we have a little bit of a conflict. We have city regulations, we have state regulations, then we have the Design Review Board that also has certain regulations, and we have to be able to work as to who is going to have the higher authority, the Design Review Board or a code enforcement personnel that's following state and city regulations. So that's another area we're asking them to help resolve. The underground wiring, we moved that so that the Park Commission would have the task of working on that using the appointed people from last year that City Council approved. So we're asking tonight to consider the approval of the action agenda for the Planning Commission for this next fiscal year. And actually, they'll get started on it even probably before the fiscal year starts.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion? A second.
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we approve the Planning Commission action agenda.
All right.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
We've got a second. Okay. Any discussion?
Well, I still want to say that I'm not happy with 9 and 10, but that's...
I'm not either. They ought to be up here at 1 and 2, but... but Dick, I went along with you to put it at 9 and 10. Now, do you want to move it up? Is that what you're not satisfied
with? No, I don't think.
Okay. I just want to say thank you to the Planning Commission. And Ed, you're here representing them. And, they do an awful lot of work. They help us so much. And we work together, I think, pretty well. Just appreciate all the Planning Commission does to help our city improve and move forward. And it's never been a busier time, I don't think. And it's not going to, I don't think it's going to quiet down at all. So, as I mentioned earlier, I think collectively we're going to have to find ways to move items, to move issues faster. So that we can get through a lot of them, because it's no telling when we might get down to 9 or 10, for instance. May not be this year. And then in the meantime, there'll be other things that crop up. Okay. Any other comments?
I want to make a comment, Mr. Berry, with what you said, and with Ed present here, knowing if you attend the Planning Commission meeting, the volume of activity that comes through that commission, and the thorough job that you all do. A lot of what you do comes before us, and you certainly, I know many of you do an incredible job with your homework to ensure you do your due diligence before it gets here. And I just want to thank you personally for what you do. It's a quality job.
And Ed Evans, the same goes for you and your staff, and all the staff, everybody we've got, all of our staff folks, all of our department heads. But Ed, thank you for your work you do to work with the Planning Commission and giving them materials. And just like Roger gives us materials, we couldn't do we'd do a small amount of what we can do if we didn't have your help. And so we thank you.
And please thank your staff for that from council. Okay. Any more comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, item four, election schedule for the council elections for 2007.
Mr. LeDuc. Yes, sir. And before I get this, I just want to throw a plug in. Next Monday, we do have an extra city council meeting at 5 o'clock. We will have some sandwiches, probably around 4:30 in that room there. And we'll be hearing from the Downtown Association and trying to look at as many as four different items next Monday night. Number one being the parking, then the signage, and then we got the newspaper publication boxes and the sidewalk sales. So, again, we hope everybody can come, and we're really looking forward to that meeting. What you have before you tonight is the election schedule. This is not something you need to vote on or not, but we want to give it to you as information. Sarah Rideout looks, starting with November 6th election day, and works backwards from that time to set up this schedule. One of the things that I got a call today from a council member asking about the non-partisan election. That's something that will probably be on your agenda for next meeting for you to determine whether or not you want to have nonpartisan elections. If council makes that decision and you approve it, then there has to, in the next general election, the citizens would vote upon that and make the decision. So in other words, it would not be applicable to this election year. It'd be applicable to the election in 2009 if it takes place. So that'll be before you at the next meeting. So it's really a two-step process. Council has to approve it first. If you approve it, it goes on the ballot. And then on the ballot, if the voters approve it, then it goes into effect in the next election schedule. So this election schedule is still under the Democratic Republican Party primaries. It allows for write-in candidates, etc., and you see the schedule before you. So, again, this is information that we wanted to give you so that Councilmember Sprawls, Clyburn, and Mayor Cavanaugh are up for election this year. That's all I have to report.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Roger. Is there anything else anybody has? If not, we stand adjourned.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Thank you, Gary.
Okay. That's right. A week.